Today's Sunday session is proudly brought to you by More Beer at www.morebeer.com.
I poured in my mouth and it just wasn't going down.
My first beer was an IPA, the best IPA I've ever drank, mostly because I brewed it.
If you have a scale that is good for measuring cocaine, you're probably good for measuring hops.
You're scaring me.
I think the information is awesome and the audio sucks.
Make some sugary water, throw some yeast in there,
and you're going to drink good beer.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Beer is fine.
God damn it, man. Oh, my God.
Now, live from the Brewing Network Studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Yeah. Welcome back to the studio, everybody.
Been a while.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Nice little vacation, our typical Burning Man break. Although I didn't go to Burning Man.
Home. You honored it.
Yeah. Burned your own man at home.
That's right. Stayed home. Doc went to Burning Man, although he's not with us today to report back about the mayhem.
He's still recovering, maybe.
Yeah. I just like to keep our vacation week going, though, you know?
Why not?
We had set a precedent over the last 4 or 5 years, and it just kind of works out like normal anyway. We just put our off weeks back-to-back, 1 month and the next.
See what I mean?
It just works out great. So it was a nice little break, but we are back and ready for action. We got a great show coming at ya.
All right.
Today, reaching the top of the charts, Mitch Steele with his brand new IPA book will be on the program today. Talking IPA.
Wait. The world famous Mitch Steele?
That's right. Mitch Steele. They released the IPA book. He talked about it at the National Homebrewers Conference, but it hadn't been released just yet.
Right.
And now it's out in the marketplace.
Oh, yeah? Why don't we have one here?
And, I don't know. It's not Mitch's fault.
Where's the stone beer?
I have a whole bunch of them on order, as a matter of fact.
No, Mitch isn't here. Let's blame him.
Yeah. So we will be selling the IPA book out of the Brewing Network store. They're just on the way. I think that's where they have my media copy. It's on the way with my purchased copy.
So we'll have one copy.
Yeah, they were doing pre-sales the last couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah.
And so they're out soon. Very soon.
Another benefit of being an AHA member, right?
Exactly.
You can pre-sale these things. So, you know, what we'll probably do is, I got these cases coming in. Mitch comes up to the Bay Area every now and then. I'll see if I can get him to sign some for us, do some signed Mitch Steele books.
Yeah.
But for now, he's just going to be on the program. He's Skyping in a little bit later. We'll talk about the history of IPA with him, and we'll get some IPA techniques while we're at it. I had hoped that, the Stone local rep, Dave.
Yeah.
Usually he's on top of things when there's a...
he's not on top of it.
When there's a Stone thing going on, he brings us over a keg or cases of beer.
We should be pounding Arrogant Bastards right now.
Right. Something. We should have been doing it all afternoon.
Levitation or something.
Should have been showing up.
Really, Arrogant Bastard? I'm away with that.
I'm kidding. Yeah.
Levitation is such a good beer.
Oh, my God. It's amazing.
I can never find it. He always every time I tell him that, what are you talking about? You can find it everywhere. Really? Where?
Yeah. In my tap room.
He's talking about in the brewery. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
At the Stone World Bistro.
What do you mean? I got tanks of that stuff.
He tells me.
Where's it going?
He says that the BevMo has it. And the BevMo does not have it.
No.
And then he goes back and he goes, oh, well, which BevMo do you go to? Who cares? It's you said the BevMo.
The one.
Oh, it's the other BevMo.
Yeah. There's two. They opened a second one recently.
Like, right nearby here?
Yeah.
Oh, right. There are more than two. Right.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, Levitation is where it's at. Oh, well, next time. Mitch comes up all the time. He has an open invite into the studio, so he'll bring us some Levitation. I'm sure of it. At some point. But today, we're going to be talking IPAs with him. So if you've got questions, you know, don't be afraid to ask. Mitch is a master, and we'll find out a little bit about why he wrote the IPA book instead of somebody else, and try to get some tips and tricks from him while we're at it. Beaver, are you rubbing your breasts against the microphone in there? What the hell is going on?
Maybe.
That's kind of hot. Maybe.
Better than her yawning. Did you hear that yawn? What are you wearing? Stifled?
I'm tired.
Yeah.
Would you turn 30 yesterday?
29.
34, I think.
I can't tell if she's lying to me or not. Is it really 29?
September 5th, 1983.
Oh, what, I got to do math?
29.
Yeah. So you're 40 to me. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. You're 162.
Well, see, this is the problem about being a mother. This is what motherhood does to you. It ages you prematurely.
Right.
I mean, she could pass for 45 easily. No problem.
That is so awful.
Wow.
Hey, I didn't get you pregnant again.
You're a little echoey in that new booth.
Yeah.
It's that new mic I got you working
with. It's okay. I just won't talk.
No, it's all right.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to doze off halfway through the show anyway because I'm real tired.
It makes Bebo all big and boomy sounding.
Sounds like she's in the shower.
Yeah.
I mean, it's too bad we're not recording drum tracks in there, but for the microphone, it's not too great.
Well, we can compare the recordings of her in the shower later on.
Whisper, is that better?
That is nice.
A little bit.
It's a nice little sound booth you got there. It's just a little echoey. I got to do some more soundproofing in the back.
Yeah.
You know, I decided today.
It's a little warm in here.
I was thinking about Bevo being old.
There's a fan out there.
Old.
You can keep the door open until you're taking calls. That'll help.
Too. I don't want to.
You don't want to be near us. Just keep it locked. I was thinking about Bevo being old today, and I thought about it. I always feel old every time there's a, you know, another year goes by, and you go, oh, like I'm about to do 35.
Yeah.
In a couple weeks here.
Yeah.
Tasty's just looking at you going.
That's a slippery slope. The 30s go by like crazy.
But here's what I decided. You're not old until you start wearing t-shirts and saying things like, I'm not 40, I'm 18 with 22 years of experience.
I fucking hate that.
You know what I mean?
That's so dumb.
This is not a beer belly. It's a gas tank for a sex machine.
Oh, God.
I've decided that you're not old until you start doing stupid things like that.
Buying you one of those for your birthday.
He needs a hat with that, something like that on it, too.
For example, our friend Tasty here is never coming in here with any douchey quotes about, I'm not... Whatever he is. I'm not 109.
No, Tasty likes to have sex.
I'm just covered in dirt because I was gardening. Or, I don't know.
So I've decided that Tasty is not old because he's not doing these stupid... You know, you put on the hat.
It's not an age. It's a behavior is what it is.
Right.
That's what old is, yeah.
And it's a very specific behavior.
Yeah,
it's specifically these stupid quotes.
I can't stand to be around old people. Really. They bore me to death.
Right. Yeah. You just feel yourself dying. You're bored to death.
Tasty keeps getting younger, it seems like, as time goes on.
Yeah.
He visits more bars than most 22-year-olds, I think, in
he's
a given week.
He's a rare vintage,
yes.
This Tasty.
I'm on a different program for some reason.
Oh,
it's inspiring.
Yeah.
So, you're not old, Bevo, until you come in here like, you know, it's not a gunt, it's a... it's a reusable grocery bag.
Oh, gross.
I don't know.
I am wearing a t-shirt
that
says Wizard in Training.
Oh, God.
That's appropriate for you.
I'm not 29. I'm just 4 with a thyroid problem.
Right. Hey, Beavis, how do you like your fountain that Schumann and I made you for your birthday?
It's so retarded.
Bet you haven't turned that off yet.
It's in my drunken state last night, I was adamant that it was going in the backyard.
Yeah.
Is that movie on YouTube? Do you mind taking a movie?
Shitty thing is on my front porch.
Yes.
Front porch, yes.
I blame Sam.
Schumann and I made Bevo a fountain. It's in, you know how the fountains with little babies pissing? It's always like a little boy pissing or a little, you know.
Like the mannequin piss, the famous one in Brussels.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We thought, why aren't there any like angel chick pissing statue fountain things? And so we made one.
Because they're all in Germany.
Maybe that's what it is. So we made her an angel. She's a beautiful angel. She's got a long flowing dress and fancy wings.
It is re-damned hearted.
And then we made her piss like a dude. Like she's like peeing in an arch.
That's
into
a pretty good stream for a chick.
I yeah, thought. Yeah.
You don't know where it's going to go. That thing's like...
Wait, what was she peeing?
Cranberry juice.
She had a little...
The effect was red.
There was an infection or something like that.
She's got
an issue or something.
Yeah. She got punched in the kidneys in a bar fight.
Yeah. So, Schumann and I make her this thing, and then, you know, we were wishing that your party last night was at, like, a private residence, because I was sort of, I'll admit, I was embarrassed to bring this thing to... We brought it to the EJ Fair, It was a crowded Saturday night, and we've got to set up this angel pissing fountain in the middle of EJ Fair to give people
everybody her gift. Sees them bringing in. It's not like they just slide it in. You know, everybody's going, "What the hell's going on?"
So I kind of pushed out, and I made JP hold a curtain around it while we showed it to Bebo because I, you know, not everybody is okay with an angel pissing blood fountain.
No, I know everybody that goes there. There was like two, you know, Jehovah guys there in that place. You know,
oh God. Yeah. Yeah, they probably wouldn't have been too happy.
They've been too happy with it.
Well, you brought it in. It was like it's 3 feet long or something like that. And
it's big. It's
obviously heavy because it took two of them to carry it in.
Yeah, right. And then it was, you know, it's all, you know, flat. It's probably 2 feet high. And then off to one side on one end, there's a lump sticking up a good 2 feet. And I'm like, oh my God, they got her a Sibian.
Yeah.
They got her a fucking Sibian for her birthday.
Been. That would she would have liked that better, although that probably would be on the back porch, not the front porch.
I don't know what a Sibian is.
It's a rideable dildo.
Yeah. Oh, Christ.
Yeah. you straddle a saddle.
Yeah, well, you can get Christ into it, yeah.
Yeah.
Electronically controlled.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Programmable,
it's
maybe.
Got four speeds.
So Sammy put it on the front porch for me?
Yeah,
my man.
On Sunday, too.
And he put water in it, and it's still slightly tinged pink.
That's good.
I knew Sammy wouldn't let me down.
The JTV audio is kind of jacked up. It's tinny, and I think it's using the internal thing. So at the break, we'll switch it out. But in the meantime, if you guys want to hear the audio, you got to go on the site. Sorry about that.
There you go. All right.
I don't know what's happening.
Well, like I said, we got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking to Mitch Steele in a little while. I do have a couple of announcements to get through for you. You know, our Hop Grenade IPA kits are still in the store. Get them while they're hot. And fresh Hop Grenade IPA kits. I've seen a few pictures being posted of people with their kits.
Hell yeah.
Very, like very much so.
Yeah. You know, Nate Smith had a big part in designing that recipe along with Tasty and just our years of knowledge here at the BN. So it is a very much a Nate Smith-inspired kit. And we're actually going to be talking about another one of Nate's beers today. We're doing IPA with Mitch Steele. But later on, we're going to talk about... I don't know. I don't even the word session beer doesn't describe it. It's an ultra session ale.
Super session.
I think. Yeah. And Nate brewed it. I tried it at Triple Rock. I was down there on Friday. And the manager there, Jesse, who's a nice kid.
Good
goes,
dude.
Goes, hey, you got to try this beer that Nate made. And I had heard about it, of course. Oh, my God. It knocked my socks off. It's like 2.5%.
Yeah.
And 2.5%.
Full of flavor. Really wonderful beer. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the program, too, with Nate and see how to do a session beer. Nice Good. Contrast to the IPA, right?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Okay. So Hop Grenade IPA kits, new glassware and other merchandise is in the store. More on order. You can get the forum on mobile devices now. If you just go to the forum, it should automatically go to mobile devices. Bebo, turn the thing off.
I did.
In
I'm
there.
Trying. I'm sorry. Everything's falling. I don't know what to do.
Not be so clumsy.
Shut up.
Stop breathing and moving and living. All right. Shop at Amazon through us. Do all your normal shopping, but if you click the Amazon link right there on our homepage, some people even click that link and then they put it in their favorites or their favorites bar, and then they don't forget. And it's, you know, it's just an easy and free for you way to support the Brewing Network, and a lot of you have been doing it, and it really helps things, keep the lights on around here. So if you're shopping at Amazon, you know, especially, God, are the holidays coming up or something?
Mitch's book, you can get it on Amazon.
Oh, so there you go.
Click through our site, get his book into your basket, and
perfect.
Order it.
You can do the same with Micromatic. There's a Micromatic banner right there on our homepage near the player, and you click that, and you can buy all your tap and keg needs there, and we get a little cut of that. iPhone and Android apps are available. You can listen to the live stream. It's only the live stream. You don't get to download shows there. You got to go to the site for that. But anytime we're live, and actually just the stream is running 24 hours anyway. We play archives on it. Just search BN Mobile in the Android market or iTunes. Some people still writing to me that the Android doesn't work or this one doesn't work, but
there's a good one in feedback about it too.
I'm still convinced it's user error.
Yeah.
Because it seems to work for everybody. We have both platforms sitting in the studio right now and everybody's works. So I don't know what to tell you. Buy a new phone. Go to Amazon through us and buy a new phone. I don't know. All right, you can watch this live all the time, justin.tv/brewingnetwork. Subscribe and join the BN Army. You're put into the More Beer Monthly Donation Giveaway, and $100 goes your way if you're drawn. The more you donate, the more you're entered, so do it.
Do it now.
All right, all these updates and more over on Twitter, and... All right, send show ideas over to Scott the Jew, scott@thebrewingnetwork.com. Send your feedback to feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com. All right, should we get right into feedback, JP?
Let's do it.
You like that?
I do. I'm into it. I can be into it. I can get down with that bullshit.
All right. Feedback's brought to you today by White Labs. There's a brand new and all new White Labs hotline. You can call in and tell them about your favorite yeast for a chance to be featured in the next White Labs commercial right here on the Brewing Network. You just call 347-MY-YEAST. 347-MY-YEAST and leave a message about your favorite White Labs yeast. If it's good, we'll cut it into a commercial and you can help promote White Labs here on the BN and become famous.
That's right.
Remember how famous Push got with his famous line, "I'm a pretty techie guy"? You can be the next pretty techie guy.
That took over the nation, huh?
Yeah.
I missed it.
If it's good. If it's not good, we'll still cut it in the commercial and just make fun of you.
Right. Maybe we should call the number and do a commercial just for fun.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I traded in my I'm not 30, I'm 20 going on another 10 t-shirt for a pretty techie guy t-shirt. So that's how by storm everything was taken. All right.
Oh my God!
You've got mail.
Kick ass.
All right, dear Justin, or as you're currently known to me, you know talent hack. I've been homebrewing now for a little over a year and discovered the BN out of boredom this past January while spending the holidays with my folks. I think that's the best time to find us.
I think so, too.
When you're bored to death.
When you have to spend time with your folks.
Yeah.
He started telling his dad to suck a dick after that.
Yeah, hey, Dad.
I don't want any more dark meat.
What a truly amazing thing you've done. I've yet to listen to any of the latest Sunday sessions as I decided to work my way through the archives. But everything the BN has had to offer has been amazing to my brewing. I do not honestly know how to quantify all the ways you've helped and entertained me. Well, that's awesome. Thanks for the nice words. However, I feel you must know.
However.
There's always a however. My girlfriend hates you. Story of my life. This has been going on my whole life. Long before the BN have the women in my friends' lives hated me.
Taylor likes you.
My Sunday, give it time.
Yeah, well, I'm lying.
Right. My Sundays used to be a day one a month when I would make an extract batch and call it good. Now I'm up by 6 a.m. and starting my strike water almost every week and my iTunes along with it. So thanks from Mitch.
So he went from brewing once a month to every weekend.
Every weekend. And not just extract, it sounds like, but all great. So he's lengthened his brew day. Well, listen, have your girlfriend call in. We'll have a little chat. I'll tell her about what a great guy I am. And why she shouldn't hate me.
How I like puppies and rainbows. And
I'm good at rainbows. That. I'm really good at telling people about how great I am. Dear Brewcasters. Is Bevo running a vibrator in there right now? I swear to God, I just heard a...
I thought she had her own face going.
I have a fan on.
Yeah, well, turn your mic off.
Well, I was going to say something and then I stopped, but I didn't turn the mic back off. But I'm going to now.
I don't think that's a fan. You ever heard a fan that sounds like that?
She gets bored in there.
She does get bored in there.
It's mounted onto the underside of the desk. The deskian.
Why is the fan blowing out?
All right, dear Brewcasters, I'm ready to say how excited I am about your IPA kit. I gotta say, I'm very impressed. Well, kind of. I've heard some great feedback from people who've brewed it, and I love what I'm hearing. I must admit, I had some sticker shock when I saw the price of the kit, but as a reasonable human being, I assume there was a good reason for the cost. And don't get me wrong, I'm not cheap. I've only brewed one batch of beer, and after the earth cooled, the dinosaurs died, and I learned that homebrew can be tasty, I realized that the $32 I paid for my first extract kit is indicative of the quality of the ingredients that came with it. Seems to me you guys picked the best ingredients, and why shouldn't you? You're offering, you're the effing Brewing Network. So when I get my brew skills up to where I want them to be, I'm going to buy that IPA kit and brew the hell out of it. Peace out, you dirty hippies, and keep up the awesome work from Giles. You know, I wouldn't wait for your skills on this one. It's a piece of cake. All the instructions are right there. It's an extract kit to start. And your skills are there, man. If you've brewed a batch of beer, you can brew this IPA kit. As far as the cost goes, you know, you're right. We did go the extra mile, making sure all the ingredients were the best.
Hard to find hops in that one.
It's also a packaging thing. You know, now, were there avenues that we could have made this kit a little bit cheaper? Yes. But the difficulty of bringing it to market has always been the problem. Like, some people have always said, well, why don't you just partner with one of the homebrew shops and just make it a regular thing? Well, because to have enough SKUs for us to do on, like, multiple kits, shops just can't be bothered. They got their own thing going on, and it becomes very difficult. So this was our best option. And you know what? I'm super happy with the kit. I'm happy with the way it looks. I'm happy with the way it tastes, and I'm pretty happy with the ingredients. So. Yeah.
Well, keep in mind that's also shipping included.
Right, so it's a delivered price.
Right, you're not paying shipping on top of that $64.95 or whatever it is.
And I'll tell you that shipping is a big part of it. I think $11.65 is the cheapest way we can ship it to people. So you could subtract like that.
No, it's $14, I think.
Oh, it's $14.
Yeah, it's large.
Holy cow!
It's large, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's a big part of the price, too.
Yeah. So if you want to pick it up.
Right. All right. Hi, all. Would somebody please tell Mr. Crossley... it's two S's in my name, bitch.
It's Crosley.
That the effing Android app does not work for shit.
Well, that's your problem. You're trying to shit on it. And that doesn't... No, it doesn't work for shit.
Ain't going to help anybody.
You loser. Trying to make a stylus with your turd. It's not going to happen.
No matter how much he tries to push it.
It might. I don't know.
And tell that, oh, the stream must have been down. No, I had the app installed. It worked fine. Somewhere along the line, the thing updated itself, and now it doesn't work. Please, man, check with the app guys and find out what's going on. Suck it, app guys. Suck it with a vengeance. Peter.
The vengeance.
I'll call the app guys again and tell them, listen, Peter said it's not working. See what he could do. I will. I'll check it. I mean it. I'm going to tell him that you wrote in, Peter. Let's see.
Peter.
I guess somebody sent us a list of winners in the Minnesota State Fair.
Yeah, our buddy Garrett. I guess we dominated Minnesota, man.
Really? Yeah. So here's who won under with the BN as their club. Out of 680 entries, that's a big competition.
It's not bad.
Really big, yeah.
No.
Wow, all of these people. Best of show, second runner-up, Brad Tracy for his Pale Ale. That's a Brewing Network listener. Category 1, Light Lager, had 20 entries. First, Garrett Caldwell with an American Lager. Second, Garrett Caldwell with a Premium American Lager. Third, Garrett Caldwell with God a Dortmunder.
Nice
right?
work, man.
Dominated category
1. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Wow. Category 3, European Amber Lager, had 11 entries. First place, Brad Tracy with his Kaiserfest. Yeah. Second, Patrick McNeely, Vienna Lager, both BN Army club members. Category 10, American Ale, 48 entries. First place goes to the Brewing Network, Brad Tracy with his Pale Ale, D1502 Pale Ale.
See, you can trust the guy with two first names.
I guess so.
Trust him to make good beer.
Honorable mention went to Zach Carpenter with his Brown Coat Freedom Ale. There you go. Category 13, Stout, 45 entries. Honorable mention, Garrett Caldwell with a Russian Imperial Stout. Category 21, Spice Herb Vegetable Beer, 25 entries. Third place, Patrick McNeely with his Coconutty Vanilla Porter. Hey, guys, I named it Coke, not just coconut, but coconutty.
That's crazy.
Waka, 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 coconutty.
That should be the next beer.
And now my waka, waka witch. Third place.
My pie in the face Flanders.
I don't know if you want to try my coconutty porter or my waka, waka witch.
Game of Dortmunder.
Okay.
I'm dying.
Category 22, smoke flavored and wood aged beer. 27 entries. Third place, Garrett Caldwell with his smoked Baltic Porter.
Did I mention Garrett sent us his email?
Right. Category 24, traditional mead. 8 entries. First place, Patrick McNeely with his Guajillo mead. And category 25, Mellow Mel. Third place, Pat McNeely, once again, with his Tart Cherry Mead. Well done,
yay,
everybody.
Good
job. Uh-huh. Walker, Walker. All right, Derek writes in, I've been listening for over 3 years and have never wrote in before. Just wanted to say that the Garrett Oliver interview on The Session was by far the best interview I've heard yet. Get that guy a show. Yeah, Garrett kicked ass.
Yeah.
And luckily, all of the feedback since the show has been fantastic feedback, as opposed to the feedback during the show. Why didn't you say the F word enough? Why did you be so nice to him? Why would you do that?
That's a good new voice.
I don't know.
New character alert.
Why do you do it?
Because we're boring, that's why. Because we're boring and unimaginative.
Yeah. I didn't find myself thinking, oh, I wish I could drop an F-bomb right here. And
right.
It just didn't seem appropriate. Yeah. I mean,
hey, Garrett, can I ask a question? Yeah. Fuck shit balls in my face clitoris. Please respond.
It just never came up.
It just doesn't seem
I mean, we're listening to the guy, and never once are we like, oh, you know what this great interview needs is a dick joke.
Yeah, more balls right now.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah, he's like... we're listening to his every word. It's all gold, you know.
Yeah,
we're paying attention to that. We're not thinking about it.
Yeah,
we didn't even have to go there.
No,
I mean, plus he talked a lot.
Yeah, so it's hard to get him in.
Yeah, if we got bored, we'd have been dropping the F-bombs.
Sure. Yeah. Plus, I unplugged JP's mic for most of the interview.
Wait, I was going to say maybe you edited out all my my awesome home runners.
Right. All right. Anyway, yeah, Garrett was rad, and I would love to have him do his own show. I'll be contacting him. I just know he's a busy dude, but it would be a great show. I would listen to it, and I don't listen to anything, but I would listen to a Garrett Oliver show. He's very well-spoken.
Yeah.
All right, Zach writes in, hey, Justin, Zach from Madison, Wisconsin here, and I just wanted to say thanks. It's because of Brew Strong, the Jameel Show, and The Session that I'm a better brewer. I was corporal in the BN until I changed banks, and my card didn't work anymore. But it only gave me the chance to sign back up as a ranger. Oh, that's good.
Mm. I didn't even know we had that. That's great.
I think that's an upgrade.
That's right up more, right?
I like that. If you if you cancel your card, we only give you the opportunity to sign up at a higher level. I'm a crane operator, and it's nice to have something good to listen to while I'm building America. Oh, Jesus.
Knocking people off.
Be careful out there.
We are the foundation builders.
Your shows have infected me. Of course they have, as almost any guy on the job can tell you. I won't shut up about brewing shit. I could ramble on for days. I won a couple golds and a bronze. There you go.
Yay.
Okay. Your commercials are too long and you need more free content. Just kidding. But really, JP can suck it. From Zach. All right. Thanks for listening. Eric writes in, I just heard an offer so sensual that they couldn't mention it over internet radio in my middle school classroom. What? I'm getting ready for the new school year and had some tunes playing from Pandora, and all of a sudden, one of the occasional commercials sounded much more interesting and familiar. But don't worry, the Pandora version of the Adam and Eve ad lacked not only the forced awkwardness of your read, but also the titillating list of available categories of naughtiness. Yeah, see, I don't think you're allowed to read that on terrestrial radio. That's why they're like, hey, people who are on the podcast, can you read anal booby jobs?
But even on Pandora, you can't...
good question.
I don't know.
Pandora probably just says no. They don't need the money as bad as I do. Adam and Eve writes to me. They're like, would you be willing to promote farm? Yes. Yeah. Would you be... Yes. Yes.
Please say that you drink gallons of sperm, and that's the only thing that keeps your coat shiny.
Hi, I'm Justin Crossley for Adam and Eve. I drink gallons of sperm to keep my coat shiny. Shop at adamandeve.com right now. I don't even care.
Yeah. Pay me.
I do not care.
Where's my check?
They stopped even asking. They just send me the copy knowing that I'll never refuse anything.
Yeah, nor should you.
Hi, I'm Justin. When's the last time you had two rods in your butt?
I know it's not that long ago for me. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
If you want videos on anal stretching.
All right. Eric says good work overall.
Yeah, great.
All right. I don't know who this is. Oh, Tubby and I Know It writes in. I used to think that JP was a funny asshole playing a bigger funny asshole on the program, but now he's just being an asshole. What the hell is the point of having a host who hates homebrewers with glee? I get it. There's tons of bad homebrewers out there. Are they really wanting to learn from a host that denigrates and slags them every chance he gets? It sucks the fun right out of a great program to hear another piss take against a crowd that supports the BN, wins medals for it, and is stupid passionate. And now I get JP as the BN retweeting JP's tweet, tweaking brewers for reacting to a cringeworthy portrayal of the hobby in a commercial for Buffalo Wild Wings. Dude, put down the angry JP hat and let go of the bitter beer face. One love. Tasty, and I know it.
One love, yeah.
Love, dude.
I read this earlier. It got sent directly to me, too. From the same guy. I wanted to make sure I knew. And I thought about it, and on one hand, I thought, you know, maybe as a point, like, who does want to hear a host on a brewing show who hates homebrew?
Yeah.
On the other hand, I thought, it's always funny, and especially because half the time, he's either completely wrong, and it's obvious. I'm right. speaking of you, of course. Yeah. And the other time, you're completely right, and it's obvious. Right. So you're never really, in other words, it's never really inappropriate.
I don't think it's that far off the mark. I mean, it's obvious that I'm doing it as a joke.
Right.
It's obvious.
Most of the time.
But sometimes, I mean, we've all had bad homebrew.
Right.
You know, and also, I've long since given up the someone's going to learn something from me today.
Right.
Bullshit. I mean, you know, we have Tasty, we have Doc, we have Nate. You don't need another guy going, hey, I know things too. I'm just here to be funny. And so.
But it shows you care. And that you really like want people to up their game and try harder, JP.
I do. Anyway.
Right. Well, the email does bring up an interesting point, and I had thought for a minute about leaving this out of the conversation, especially because I have a feeling that some of my sponsors feel differently than I do, but it's not really me to keep my mouth shut, so I'm going to bring... He brings up the commercial for the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Right.
You've seen the commercial, right?
Love the commercial.
It's a couple of guys, you know, at a homebrewer's house, and essentially, you know, the homebrew is terrible. It's this weird science experiment, and it's so bad, and everybody knows it, so that's why they should go to the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Right.
It's hilarious. It's so funny. Yeah. The guy, like, serves them like a bratwurst beer, right? They even say, oh, it's a bratwurst beer. But the funny part is that it's a glass filled with bratwurst.
Right.
It's not even beer. It's funny.
That's just ludicrous.
And there's carboys everywhere that are bubbling over.
Oh, they're foaming over like crazy.
Oh, yeah. And everyone's so in an uproar. We've come so far, and here they're setting us back. And it just reminds me yet again that homebrewers have no sense of humor about themselves. Now,
well, we spend a lot of time on this, you know, we put all this stuff in, and then you just shit on it.
I don't get a lot of time, and when I do get a portion of my time, I'd like to spend it doing something I enjoy, and I don't appreciate someone bagging it.
I feel like the argument is going to be that we've done a lot to change the image of homebrewing, and that to portray the image like that out there is not funny, and it's not good for homebrewing. Well, guess what? It's comedy.
Right.
Do comedians not make gay jokes because gay rights in America have come so far that a gay joke will set them back to the Middle Ages again?
Yes.
No, they make gay jokes because they're funny.
Right. Especially gay comedians.
Does Chris Rock not make racist jokes about whites, blacks, you name it, but particularly blacks, because blacks' rights have come so far in America that if he makes a joke, it's going to set us back to slavery?
Right.
Of course not. He makes the jokes because they're funny. So for homebrewers to take the same hypocritical attitude about themselves, well, we've come really far. So if we're portrayed like that on television, it's just going to put us right back into the garage. Guess what? You're in your garage already.
Right. Well, and I mean, you know, as far as like, you know, black rights and gay rights and stuff, that's stuff that is affected by the outside world. You know what I mean? They actually have an image that they care about upholding. Because it means that, gay marriage, for example, then when that finally gets passed and is legalized throughout the whole country, you're going to be part of everybody else. Finally, right?
Right.
What are homebrewers afraid of going to be a part of? Like, you know what I mean? We go, that set us back 10 years. In whose fucking eyes? You think the guy who does model trains gives a shit about your stupid hobby? No. No one gives a fuck unless you have a party and you bring some beer. Otherwise, it's just an internal joke. I guarantee whoever wrote
that
is a homebrewer. Whoever wrote that's a homebrewer.
Because they knew a lot about homebrewing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, also, it's the feeling that when you go offer somebody a homebrew who's never had one, I've seen that Buffalo Wild Wings commercial. I'm not having that. Come on, give me a break. So anyway,
I saw a commercial.
What is it? A bratwurst beer? Waka waka waka.
That's usually, they're usually funny. Have you ever seen a serious Buffalo Wild Wings commercial?
Right. You know? No, but yeah, and every group that they make fun of, are they always going to get protested for that?
Yeah.
So anyhow, I'm just saying it. I'm saying it right here. I don't agree with you. Lighten up, everybody. Yeah. It was funny. Now, if it wasn't funny, I'd be pissed.
Yes, of course.
Because that's wrong.
Yeah.
But you get a pass on virtually everything if it's funny in
well,
my book.
Yeah, and you know, it's they make fun of fantasy football players.
Right.
Or I saw one commercial where basically all the guys are pussy whipped, and so their wife is calling looking for them, and they're hiding at the Buffalo Wild Wings. What, does that mean every guy's pussy whipped now? I mean, you've never answered the call from your wife, and now it's making fun of you? That's funny to you.
Hey, that's not funny. I'm married, too.
We have feelings.
And I'm allowed to do things once in a while, too.
Only
if I ask
Thursdays.
Permission.
Yeah.
Nicely. If there's really nothing else going on.
Well, and this, you know, kind of makes me say, I fucking hate homebrewers sometimes, dude. I fucking hate them sometimes.
Right.
Because they're no fun.
Right.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what I love about them, actually.
They're no fun?
They're predictable, and they're kind of nerdy. Yeah.
Right.
I like them.
Well, anyway.
Most of them.
Most of them. Yeah. So, some dicks.
Why were you looking at me when you said that?
No, I don't know. I usually talk to somebody I'm looking at.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, by the way, that BN hat is quite attractive.
It's pretty sexy, right?
Is that new?
That's brand new. It's in the store right now.
I keep thinking
too,
you got it on kind of crooked, but actually the logo's on the side.
So no, my skull is actually misshapen, so.
It's a styling trucker mesh hat.
It's not awesome. Really misshapen. I mean, it is, but, you know.
It's pretty neat.
All right, good, huh?
I got to get through this feedback. And by the way, if I come back next week saying that commercial is stupid and offensive, then you'll know that one of our sponsors doubled their sponsorship rate and asked me to take back my feelings about the humor of that commercial. All right, Ted in Hawaii writes in, wow, I pay $240 a year to listen to your shows, and I guess I can only download so many shows a day to put on my phone. That's dumb. I did download about...
That's dumb!
I did download about 20... That's not funny, JP.
No, it's not funny.
Don't make fun of people.
Because dumb people are going to be offended.
I did download about 20 shows and put them on my phone, but I think if you're a member, you should not be limited. I pay $7 a month for Netflix, and they don't tell me to stop skipping around and just... Oh, Jesus. I understand the point of trying to limit downloads, but it's still dumb. I've bought your glasses and your stickers and given you money. Let me download it. Money damn dough that I don't. Love you, die dead in the Dwayne.
Into Dwighty.
Listen, Ted.
First of all, can I comment?
Yeah.
You don't pay $7. You pay $7.99. Don't be an asshole. Don't round down.
I guess you fixed that.
Prick.
Well, right, you showed him, JP.
Yeah, now you can continue.
Look, you're actually not limited to how many shows you can download. You're only limited to how many shows you can download in a 24-hour period. If you wait 24 entire hours, you can then download another shit ton of shows. Why do you have to do it? Are you going to get through all 20 shows that you download already in 24 hours?
Yes.
There's not even that many hours in the day.
Okay? No day.
So I know it looks like you're being limited, but it's really just to make sure that all of our members who pay, yourself included, can download as well. Now, as to why Netflix doesn't do this to you, it's because Netflix has 4 million of you paying for their bandwidth.
Right.
I have about 200. So of the 20,000 listeners that the BN has, it is a small fraction of you that donate to the cause, all right? So the only way we can do this is to just throttle it. It's not limiting. We're throttling. So if you wait 24 hours, you can download. And then wait another 24. I guarantee you within, what is that, like 7 days, you'll have every single show that we've ever done on Earth. Today.
If you hear more than 3 shows a day, then there's something wrong with you.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that being said, Ted, I do very much appreciate your support. I think it's rad. You're exactly the type of people we're looking out for. And as we grow and are able to develop ways to enhance your member experience, it's absolutely at the top of our list. And I mean that.
Yeah.
But for now, we're actually not limiting you. We're just limiting you within a 24-hour period.
You're exactly the type of person we're looking for.
Right. Are we working on the Brewcaster experience as well?
No, you guys are on the back burner.
It's going to be the same.
Yeah, you're way at the bottom of the list.
I see. It's going to be the same.
You have a chair.
Yeah.
You're fine.
You want me to make you a fountain?
You guys can whip up pretty quick. You know how to get the parts.
Yeah.
We deeply appreciate your help, Tasty.
Well, that's good. My experience is getting better.
All right, Brandon writes in, hey guys, I've been walking around thinking that maybe Justin and JP were just a little too sensitive, unable to take criticism, and maybe beginning to whine a little. It seemed like any criticism sent into feedback really got under their skin, no matter how small.
That's bullshit. Prove it.
It'd be boring if it didn't, right?
Then I listened to the Garrett Oliver episode, one of the best interviews I've ever heard, followed by another great interview with Stu Stewart. I was driving down the road thinking what a great show this was, and then this dickless sack of shit bub calls in. As this worthless waste of sperm starts shitting all over a great interview, it finally hit me. Justin is right.
Wait, why can't I be right also?
Because you're not right.
Shit.
It goes on to say JP is wrong.
No,
I inserted that. Oh. The Brewing Network is not only a fantastic gift we all get to enjoy for free, it just keeps getting better and better. But it never takes long before some whiny, unloved, no-life sack of shit has to call or write and complain about some stupid shit that usually does not make any sense.
Sack of shit.
Bub and Tim and all you other worthless fucktards can take a... This guy's worse than JP's
poor
mouth.
Bub. Let's get Garrett Oliver on the phone to finish this email.
It gets worse. And anyway, he just basically tells you to go play on a freeway. As of today, I'm a donor. Thank you for a great show. All the brewing. And thank you, Brandon. We appreciate it. All right. Hey, B and crew, I want to let you know I renewed my subscription to BYO Magazine because they support you, and it's a great magazine. I even called them up and renewed over the phone just to make sure you got your cut. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Although there is a BYO link right on our homepage. If you don't see it, it's because you have ads blocked. But if you unblock ads, you can click the BYO link, and that will, you can renew through us too. Included is a song I wrote for you guys over a year ago that you probably ignored because it came with a mile-long email or you hated it. Hope you like it. Context is a bit outdated now. I can't play it right now. I did listen to the song. I hadn't got it a year ago, so I don't know if it got into my spam or what.
Mm.
Did you listen to the song, JP?
No.
It's okay.
Yeah?
I don't have time for it because Mitch is waiting. I told him 5:30, and here I am wasting poor Mitch's time 15 minutes late. So I will play it later in the show. Please remind me to play it. I also have another show. I've got a new Bevo song to play later in the program, too.
Oh.
So we will have song time.
Oh, yay!
On today's show. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Mitch Steele, from Stone, of course, but talking about his brand new IPA book. We'll be right back. It's The Session. Hang in there.
You're listening to The Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters.
On The Brewing Network.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. Morebeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. Morebeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to morebeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to morebeer.com today and take advantage of the buzz, the forum, the learning center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Hey, Jack, what you doing? Playing Warcraft?
No way. It's TBG time, buddy.
TBG?
Get with it. I'm playing that brewery game.
What brewery game?
No, that's the name of the site, thatbrewerygame.com.
What?
Yeah, check it out, man.
If you've ever brewed beer in your dreams or wish you could mash in right from your desk at work, you can. Kind of. With That Brewery Game. You can brew up a great batch of beer from anywhere, virtually. Then you can sell it, because in That Brewery Game, it's legal to sell your beer to the public, create recipes, brew virtually, upgrade your equipment, upload labels, and test market your brand at thatbrewerygame.com.
You still slinging pissed off birds into buildings from your phone? Forget that. Try making beer.
Sweet.
Register right now for your free account at thatbrewerygame.com. Brew. Drink. Play. ThatBreweryGame.com.
Hi, I'm Jamel Zanishev, and in addition to my work on the Brewing Network, I write the style profile column in every issue of Brew Your Own magazine.
Hi, I'm Sean Paxton, and when I'm not prepping for the Home Brewed Chef on the Brewing Network, you can find me writing articles on how to cook with your home brew for Brew Your Own magazine.
Greetings, Cretans. This is John Palmer, and when I'm not writing for Brew Your Own, I'm reading it.
John Palmer, Sean Paxton, Jamil Zainashev. If you love listening to them on the Brewing Network, you'll love reading their articles, tips, and recipes in the pages of Brew Your Own magazine. Join Jamil, John, and Sean 8 times a year in Brew Your Own. And when you subscribe to BYO on the Brewing Network website, half of your subscription price goes right back to the BN to support great beer and food programming. So sign up for Brew Your Own magazine through the BN website today so you can listen and read your way to better homebrew.
Nico, listen, our lawyer said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty crack cans.
Tasty crack can.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Session.
Brewing up our next batch of Radio Gold.
Right now.
All right, welcome back to the program. Thanks for sticking with us. We're getting right to it now. We've got Mitch Steele from Stone Brewing Company on the line with us here to talk about his new book. Hey, Mitch, thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, Justin, how are you?
I'm doing great. Sorry you couldn't be in the studio. I guess you're a busy man down there right now.
Yeah, you know, we're in about day 4 of starting up our new brew house, so my travel schedule has been cut back just a little bit.
Yeah, I bet. You guys, tell me a little bit about that brew house. You guys built an entirely new brewery?
Yeah, it's perpendicular to the existing one. It's built by Rolec, just like our first one. You know, we knew what we were getting with them, and they're great folks. And it was being installed over the course of the summer, and we're same size as the existing one. A couple of the tanks are just a little bit bigger, but basically the idea was to run them in tandem and just crank out more beer. It's going to take our brewing capacity up to 450,000 to 500,000 barrels, and we're not even close to that right now, but it gives us room to grow.
Wow. So how many barrel, I know you said it's the same as the last one, but I forget, how many barrel brew house is it?
It's 120.
Got it. And does it fit in the same building as the other one?
Well, yeah, we had to move some things around.
Right.
If you've been to our brewery, you know, we have, or we used to have 11 single brew fermenters in our first fermentation cellar, 150 barrel fermenters. And we pulled all those out to make room for the new brewery. And we've got them tucked in a couple other places in the brewery. We've got five of them in service right now, but, yeah, we had to lose those single brew fermenters, to make room for this.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to figure that out because I've seen that space. And yes, there was room, although you guys had their space where there was room filled with beer also. Not just fermenters, but beer last time I was there.
Yeah, there's no room in the building at all. And that kind of you know, prompted the other projects that we're working on right now, which is building a packaging hall next door. And the idea is to move our bottling line and our keg line down to that new building, and that'll free up all that space for new fermenters.
Wow. In the meantime, have you put all of your brewers on diet so that they can fit through the, you know, the space?
Just me.
Just Mitch. Yeah. Mitch just has to stay up on the plank now, up on the gangway.
Yeah. You have to crane lift him in and out every day because you can't walk in and out. There's no fermenters take up all the space.
If he needs to go take a sample from one of the ports, he's got to be craned down in there.
Yeah, or we get the skinny guy to do it.
Right.
So, Mitch, what are your fermenters? What are your big fermenters? What size are they?
They're 360 to 400 barrels. We call them 360s because most of our brews are 120 barrels, but we can fit three brews of anything up to about 150 barrels into those fermenters.
I see. Good.
Wow. So you have this construction going on. You have this packaging facility you're talking about, and also the hotel situation going on all at once?
Right, yeah, not quite all at once. The hotel's going to come probably after the packaging building. I think my understanding on the hotel, and I'm not really heavily involved in that because it doesn't involve production really, but right. My understanding is the hotel is probably going to start construction in January or February of 2013 and then open sometime in 2014. And then the other thing that we're working on a production level is we're opening up a new a brewery restaurant in San Diego itself in an area called Liberty Station, which is just west of the San Diego airport. It's an old military training base, and we've got a restaurant going in there and then a 10-barrel brew house and brewery, which is really exciting for us.
Oh, that's awesome.
What's it going to be called, do you know?
Liberty Station, I believe. Mm-hmm.
I guess
that
would
be the actual accurate full name, but that's close enough for me.
Yeah. No, I need details.
Okay. I'll get those for you because Greg's probably gonna tell me that I got it wrong. But.
Right.
So, Mitch, this will be a 10-barrel pilot brewery, or just for ideas, obviously very different than the stone beers, or the same.
Yeah, we're not looking to brew any of our core brands at this little brewery. The idea is to develop our own core brands for that facility and then also use it as a recipe development place as well. So we're really excited about it. I think it's going to give us a chance to do some really cool stuff.
Like session beers, maybe?
Maybe.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, you know Mitch is not opposed to a good session.
That's true. Yeah. No, but you know, I'm hoping that his will maybe be kind of pushed into what's going to happen.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you know, a good hoppy session beer is probably on the docket for that brewery. I think we all would like to do one.
Beautiful. Now, will you be sending one of your assistants now to be the brewer down there? Do you guys already know who the brewer will be?
Yeah, we promoted Chris Ketchum, who was our cellar supervisor. He's been with Stone a long time. He worked his way up from the bottling line. He drove beer and delivered beer around, and then he came back and managed our bottling line and then moved over to manage our filtration process. And he's a great guy. He's really creative. He's done a lot of great things on our pilot system. And he's pretty crafty and pretty mechanical as well. And all those things combined, you know, and just his enthusiasm and his creativity made us think he'd be a great, great fit for that job. So we're going to move him down there.
Got it. Well, good for him. That's fantastic. Well, yeah, good stuff. I'm excited to hear about this. Mitch was up here not too long ago doing a pint night at Creek Monkey, which is the local pub right around the corner from the studio here. And I remember talking to, we were talking a little bit that night, Mitch, and I just, you know, was thinking about it. You really were the perfect fit for Stone with this kind of growth. I mean, with your background, Stone didn't just need a brewer who could brew amazing beer. They really needed a brewer who could brew amazing beer and manage growing production like this, which is, you know, that's a whole other skill we've never really talked about on the show. Like, I won't go too into it now, but we've never really interviewed somebody about the differences between directing production and growth and just brewing great beer. It's an entire other set of skills that you have, Mitch, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, it's quite a challenge. And I think one of the things that I realized is I kind of know where we want to go.
Yeah.
But I haven't managed that kind of growth before either. I mean, in Anheuser-Busch, it wasn't really about growth. It was about, you know, maintaining. I mean, we were growing, but not like this. And
got it.
You know, we had our projects. I do have a lot of experience with projects and starting up brew houses and that kind of stuff. But managing 25-30% growth year in and year out, that's a whole different ballgame. And the fortunate thing is that I've been there. You know, I kind of know where we want to go and what kind of things we want to implement as we continue to grow, because I've been in really big systems. But actually managing the growth, that's tough, you know. Right. And a lot of us brewers are in that mode right now where we're trying to manage that incredible growth that we're all going through.
Sure. I would think that a good deal of your time when you start to take on a project like this has to be spent researching brewery technology and what equipment is available to you now.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, in the process of buying a new bottling line, you know, I don't have a whole lot of bottling experience. I kind of dove into it here at Stone and tried to learn as much as I could. But, you know, we hired a guy to be our production manager who has worked with bottling lines all his life, and actually our maintenance manager has as well. And I rely on them, you know. And I think that's kind of the key thing, you know, as you're growing so fast, is to hire people who've done it before. And, you know, I've always heard, you know, from a management standpoint, hire people that know more than you do, you know, and there's something to be said for that, because the whole bottling line piece and buying a brand new bottling line is certainly out of my wheelhouse. And these guys have done it all before, and they know all the manufacturers of bottling lines, and they know the pluses and minuses of all these great systems, and can make a good decision where I'm not confident that I could have without their help.
And it's good to recognize that, you know, I'm glad you brought up the bottling line, because that piece of technology in particular, it's amazing what these bottling lines do now. And many of the different manufacturers have different options. And I know very, very little bit about it other than going on a couple of tours. And when you go to a brewery who has a new bottling line, they're very, very proud of it. And they're very proud of it because of the technology used to keep beer fresh and stable on the shelf. Like, that's the point of pride. So they always tell me about, like, it does this, it does that. You're talking about, you know, 3 to 4 cleaning cycles and 2 to 3 purges of CO2 and, of course, capping on foam, but the way that happens is different by manufacturer. And it's an enormous piece of technology that has everything to do. Mitch can do everything right in that brew house, but if his bottling line isn't up to par, it doesn't matter after a week or two.
Right. Well, you know, and if I'm the owner at Stone, right, if I'm Greg or whatever, I wouldn't want Mitch futzing around with the bottling line.
Right.
I want him taking care of the brew house.
Right.
You know, let's get someone in. I mean, even, you know, Mitch, even if you knew everything about that bottling line, let's hire an expert on that bottling line to keep, you know, it's just, yeah, it's good management that way. Keep your guy focused.
Right.
You know?
But it is, go ahead, Mitch.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, when I first got to Stone in 2006 and 2007, 2008, I was doing that, and it was manageable. But, you know, as we grow, we just have to recognize when we need some help. And the bottling line was kind of getting away from me. And with all the new beers we were doing and everything, I was just getting stretched too thin. And, you know, it's good to be able to hire somebody who knows what they're doing and really knows it intimately and has been doing it for their whole career. That's just was a great move for us.
Yeah,
that's a huge bonus. I would recommend for homebrewers, you know, if you go on any of these brewing facility tours, and especially the bigger breweries, or even the big breweries, you know, focus on that bottling line and not just the volume of beer that it does. You know, kind of the more generic tourists, that's what they like to tell you. Well, this does, you know, 1,000 bottles a second. But rather focus on the sanitation, the cleaning and sanitation side of those bottling lines. It's incredible. And it kind of gives you an idea of how important it is to brewers and the different techniques that they do. I end up kind of coming away thinking like, oh my God, I'm filthy. My bottles are filthy.
Yeah, and by comparison, they might be, actually, you know. These guys will test for dissolved oxygen, all kinds of crazy stuff to make sure that that product doesn't degrade. It's like you're saying, they work so hard in the brew house, that stuff can get killed in a second on the bottling line if something's off.
Yeah. You know? Hey, Mitch, just to geek out with you for a second, talking about technology, I was just at Firestone wrapping up some video stuff. So, BNers, you're going to get to see this video. Their new brew house includes a wet mill. So,
really?
Yeah. Do you know? I'm sure you know what this is, Mitch. I didn't when I saw it, but it includes a wet mill where essentially they're hydrating, crushing, and beginning the mash process all in this mill, all as it's being milled. Mm-hmm. So the way he described it to me quickly is that first the husks are hydrated, so that when it goes through the crusher, it squeezes out the endosperm, but keeps the husk 100% intact.
Because they're not crisp anymore, they're soft.
Now they're soft. So that, which helps with the bed, obviously, in the mash tun.
Water, yeah.
But then also, they're striking it with water at whatever temp that they want. So they're essentially doing their first step, and in some cases only step, I guess, right there, as it's going through the mill and being pumped into the mash tun.
And there's no dust.
No dust at all.
Right. Yeah.
This thing blew me away, Mitch. I had no idea.
Yeah, the wet milling technology is really cool. We looked at it when we bought a new mill for Stone, and we kind of got scared. You know, because anytime you start talking about bringing in new untested technology, you tend to... you know, Steve Wagner, my boss, is a little conservative about making major changes to the brewing process. And you know, I put that option out in front of him. And I think we both kind of agreed that, hey, you know what? We don't really have the resources to make sure that this thing's going to work the way we want it to, with as fast as we're growing and not having somebody to really bird dog this. You know, that's great that Firestone Walker did this. I've everything I've heard about wet milling and have seen over the years, it really, you get great louders out of it, and you get more extract out of your brew house, and it's just a better way to do it. And I applaud them for taking that step. It's a little scary, but you know, it's those wet mills can be hard to clean, and you're right, you don't generate the dust, but sometimes the dust that is generated can just cake on everything.
Right.
You know, get it wet, it turns into cement, and so it does take a little bit more work to get it going, and we just didn't feel like we had the resources to really do it right, and that's why we kind of stayed with the tried and true.
Yeah, I can see that decision. It's such a specialized piece of equipment. You know, if Mitch's mill or anybody else's mill, Firestone's old mill that's still there, if that goes out, it's the motor. You throw in a new motor. Like Mitch knows how to, people know how to do that in the brew house.
Yep.
If this wet mill goes out, you're calling in the wet mill dude, who, by the way, lives in Germany.
Right. Yeah.
So. Doesn't speak English.
Right.
Well, think of the challenges that Firestone has. For instance, they got a new brew house and a new mill. I mean, trying to make your beers the same way, make them taste the same, that seems sort of like a big challenge at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, anytime you put in new equipment in the brew house, it's a challenge to make the beer taste the same. And I'm, you know, we're about 10 brews into our new brew house, and analytically they look great, but who knows what flavor wise what they're going to be like once they're done with the fermentation. We'll probably be getting to that point end of this week. And you know, that's a big deal. It's huge how much a little change in the brew house can impact the flavor of the beer.
Yeah, especially since you're doing bigger batches than ever. Now you've got big batches of beer that doesn't taste like your beer.
Right.
Right.
You have to give it a new name.
That's a bit of a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big problem.
Well, and you know, Mitch, the way you talked about your new brew house is kind of side by side and meant to work in tandem with your old brew house, but it's the same company and the same brew house. Firestone did the same thing. They didn't get rid of their old brew house. It is now all meant to work in tandem. But they have this old brew house with older technology that's now been retrofitted and wired to work with the new technology, or it can also work on its own. But in other words, I'm just kind of saying they're also trying to work in tandem, but essentially they have two different brew houses to work with now, and that's got to be a challenge also.
Oh, it sure is. It sure is. A lot of people have done it, and there are things, you need to look at, what we call critical control points. We've got these 3-page audit sheets that we go through for each brew that goes through that new brew house, and we compare versus the old brew house. So, just things like boiling evaporation percentage, the malt mill grind, the loudering profile, the turbidity off the louder, all that kind of stuff. We're trying to kind of dial it in to make it match the first brew house that we have.
Right. I don't envy you. I can't even change a water hose without ruining my beer. It's retarded. All right, Mitch.
I can't even brew my beer without ruining it.
Without ruining it, exactly.
I'm going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah.
Get some of that homebrew at Buffalo Wild Wings?
Yeah.
All right, Mitch, Buffalo Wild Wings commercial, offensive or funny?
I thought it was funny.
Good man.
Well, you have a sense of humor, that's why.
Right.
it takes a lot to offend me.
Well, let's try.
The way I look at it is, hey, they're acknowledging homebrewers. That's right. Cool.
Yeah,
and it wasn't in a bathtub. At least it was in a carboy.
That's true.
<Yeah.
laughs> That's a good point, Tasty. They at least are advanced on their brewing technology.
And they got in their living room. That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah,
right there. That's cool.
And it was accurate. I mean, there's been some, homebrew, like in cartoons or TV shows or whatever, that it's not accurate. But it actually looked, real.
I love that he takes a finger full of foam off of one of the carboys and he goes, that'll be ready in about 20 minutes.
Oh, man.
Okay. All right. Well, we got Mitch on here. Of course, we always want to hear about Stone and what's happening. But the real exciting part of Mitch being on here right now is his brand new book on IPAs, which is really the history of IPAs and the style. And Mitch, I wanted to start with why you? Why are you the author of this book?
Well, it's kind of funny. The Brewers, I don't know how it all came about, but the Brewers Publications approached Stone Brewing Company and Steve and myself about doing this book. And I was pretty excited about it. And Steve and I started off doing it together, putting all the research together and everything. And then, as we're growing so fast, and Steve is the president of the company, He just came to me one day and said, I'm not going to be able to do this, and what do you want to do? And I said, well, I've already got a few chapters written. Let me power through it and get it done. And but they approached us because I think, we have some experience brewing IPAs and we know a little bit about them. And we were willing to do it and we're thrilled to do it.
Okay. And I asked that knowing that you're highly qualified to write about that. I just wondered because they're really IPA being such a popular style in this country and so many brewers doing it that, I think you're the perfect author. I didn't know if there was a particular backstory.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be hundreds of people itching to write a book on IPAs.
Right.
There might have been a backstory, but I wasn't privy to it. And, all I know is that Greg came into my office with Steve one day and said, hey, the Brewers Publications would like Stone to write the book on IPA. Would you be interested in being part of the project? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't hesitate,
Oh, so now I know the backstory. The backstory is Greg and Steve were like, hey, that sucker Mitch will probably write it for us.
Yeah. And then we can back out, and then he'll have to do the whole thing. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll indicate we're helping, and then we'll back out.
Right. So the book is called IPA, Brewing Techniques, Recipes, and the Evolution of India Pale Ale. And does it start with, did you have to do in-depth research about the style?
Yeah, I did a lot of research, and it kind of got kickstarted right after we were approached to do the book. I was in England, and I was there. We had brewed a beer in Norway with Nugnia, and then went to BrewDog in Scotland to brew a beer with them. And then Greg and I went down to London and went to the Great British Beer Festival, which was the first time I'd ever gone.
Nice.
And through the the Brewers Association Export Committee, we got involved in a couple of beer events in London, and I was at the White Horse Pub, and I ended up running into somebody introduced me to a guy named James McCrory, who was part of the Durden Park Beer Circle, which is a bunch of homebrewers in London or around London who have taken a real strong interest in historical beer styles. And the guy that introduced me to James told him that I was trying to write a book on IPA. And I sat down with James for about 2 hours at the White Horse Pub, sitting outside and just drinking beer and listening and taking notes while he talked for solid 2 hours.
Wow.
on historical IPA. And that's, you know, I hadn't really started researching the book or doing anything, but that kind of got me on the path to really looking at the historical aspects of the IPA and really putting a lot of focus on that, because he told me a lot of things that I didn't realize, and it was surprising, and I just walked away from that conversation going, oh my God, this book's going to be crazy.
What surprised you about it? I mean, you know, give me some that surprises Mitch Steele on IPAs.
Yeah, it, there was a lot. I think the big thing that came out of the conversation, the Burton IPA was brewed with a very special pale malt that was kilned at a very light temperature, 150 degrees Fahrenheit, I think it was, to be very light in color. And the beer out of Burton was aged for 9 to 12 months before it was even shipped to India. So it wasn't a fresh beer at all. It was aged. It had been sitting in oak for 9 to 12 months. It had gone completely flat before it got shipped over to India.
Hmm.
It was all Golding's hops and was this 100% what they called white or extra pale malt. And really, as far as analytically, it was not too. It was pretty close to what we're brewing today as an American IPA. You know, as far as the gravities and the BUs and the alcohol contents and everything. But the fact that the beer was aged for 9 to 12 months before it even made it onto a boat to me was very surprising. And then the other thing was the fact that it was very light in color because of this extra pale or white malt. And those are the kind of things that, you know, I just walked away from that conversation going, holy smokes, I don't know anything about IPA.
Right. And, you know, I think that's the most important thing about this book because, you know, every self-respecting beer geek likes to think that we know the story of the IPA.
I know about two sentences about it.
Right?
But now that there's a book, I'm going to know a lot more.
But it's the first beer that we learned about, and we say, oh, well, you know, it was made so that beer could be shipped over to India, and we really think we know, but there are misnomers. And Mitch, you mentioning that it was already aged for 9 to 12 months already kicks off the theory that it wasn't just designed to travel to India and be good when it got there. If that were the case, it would have been put right on a boat after it was brewed and then make the long voyage.
Yeah.
Why would you let it sit around for 9 to 12 months and then make the long voyage?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, part of the reason was the barrels would explode if you didn't wait that long. You know, you had this fermentation, this primary fermentation. First thing is that these IPAs were brewed with really fresh ingredients, and back in the day, they were brewing seasonally. So they were brewing in the fall and winter and early spring, and then they stopped brewing in the summer because they didn't have refrigeration.
Okay.
So they were brewing in October, November, December, these beers, and they would use the freshest ingredients possible. So they got malt from that year's harvest, and they got hops from that harvest. And they brewed with it, and then they put it in a barrel. And then in the summertime, when the weather warmed up again, the fermentation would restart. And if they didn't allow that fermentation to proceed and go to completion, the barrels would explode on the trip over.
Got
because
it.
There was still so much fermentable sugar in the beer. And so that was a big part of it. And so the beer, definitely there was a huge effort to make the beer as flat as possible before they even put it on a boat and sent it down across the equator and down through the southern hemisphere and back up to India. So there was a, you know, you couldn't really let that thing ferment on the boat because the barrels would just burst.
Right. That's no bueno. Now, what about the average ABV of an IPA? And for that matter, how much does an IPA then, from this historical period, resemble an IPA that you might make now?
You know, it's surprisingly similar from the standpoint of, you know, from the beer specifications or targets. You know, the original gravity of the IPA that was brewed in Burton, for example, was looks to be about 16.5 to 17.5 Plato, 1060, 1070, somewhere in that range. And the bitterness units probably, and it's, this is all estimates at this point, but you know they were using 5 to 6 pounds of hops per barrel, and they were using East Kent Goldings as a rule, and you know so they probably had 60 to 70 IBUs in the beer when it was first done fermenting.
Wow.
And, you know, so it, from that standpoint, it wasn't a whole lot different. I think the biggest difference comes from the aging process, you know, the 9 to 12 months of age. Also, the fact that there were no specialty malts used in IPA at all. And it was actually the Burton brewers in particular brewed the beer to be very, very light in color. So not only did they use this white malt or this extra pale malt, they also sized their kettles so they couldn't get a real rolling boil on it. And they boiled it for a long time at a simmer. And the whole goal behind that was to not develop color in the boil, which, you know, normally the kettle boil, the wort boil, is a huge part of the color development in a wort. And they made every effort to avoid any color pickup during the boil at all.
Interesting.
And, it was kind of similar, but not quite. You know, there were some pretty significant differences.
Right.
How much attenuation were they looking for in the historical IPA, Mitch?
It was dry.
Right.
It was really dry. 2 to 3 degrees Plato.
That's really dry.
Yeah, I mean, it was not a lot different than what a lot of brewers are doing now. A lot of the really what people consider the best IPA brewers in the States, you know, are trying to make their IPAs pretty dry, and I think that was a key element of the Burton IPA as well.
One malt, one hop, dry, really dry. It sounds, you know, somewhat similar to the way some IPAs are done these days. They had it figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why were they? What do you think they were making it a goal to make the beer light? What were they trying to do there? Was it just better tasting when it was light?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I think, I didn't really dive into that a whole lot. But you know, if you're going to age a beer for 9 to 12 months, and you're going to ship it over a 6 month ocean voyage, it's probably going to pick up some color during that process. And
yeah, oxidation. Right? I mean, how do you, it's a barrel. It's going to be oxidized, right?
Yeah. You know, oxidation is browning, you know, apparently, you know, it just was one of those things where it just got lighter and lighter. There's no evidence to say that the Hodgson beer coming out of London was really that light in color. It was really the Burton brewers that really focused on making it light in color. And Allsop, in particular, was the brewer that really wanted to make the beer light. They were the ones that developed this malting process, right, or the kilning process for the white malt. And so it looks like that developed kind of 50 years after the first IPAs were shipped to India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder, like, the malting technology at that time, people were just figuring out how to make very, very lightly kilned malts. So there's maybe a showcase for that technology and those techniques at the same time, perhaps.
You know, I think there's some validity to that. I mean, if you look at some watershed moments in brewing history, the development of pale malt was huge. Mm-hmm. And that happened in the late 1600s. And by the mid 1700s, a lot of the brewers in England, or in London rather, who were porter brewers, were brewing this pale ale with this, you know, this light colored malt. And then in the 1820s or so, when Allsop and the other Burton, you know, Bass and Salt and the other Burton brewers got involved, you know, this lightness of color became a huge deal. And then, of course, 1840 or so is when Pilsners were developed. So, you know, the pale ale malt or the pale kilned malt was a huge impact on the brewing industry.
Were the barrels the beers were stored in, were they lined at all, or was this toasted oak? Or
yeah, they weren't lined with pitch.
Yeah,
And that was pretty evident, you know, looking at the research and how they treated the barrels. Hmm. They were typically very, very small, hard-grained Bosnian or, you know, Middle European oak. So they weren't like French oak or American oak that had a lot of impact on flavor. They were very tightly poured oak, and they were steam cleaned and then steam treated and allowed to age to, you know, really dry them out before they were constructed into barrels. So the general consensus is that the oak character was pretty minimal.
Yeah.
Coming off the arrival in India, and the beer probably didn't have a whole lot of oak character. Yeah, so it was a different kind of oak than what we're using today.
Yeah, more of a neutral oak.
Neutral was kind of a key element of the oak.
Hmm.
Well, Mitch, what you know about the ingredients and the processes that they were using, and the delivery method? How do you think the beer tasted? What would you think you'd taste if you were to get a couple of pints of that beer at the other end?
You know, it's hard to say. Obviously, you know, the Golding's hops were huge. The clearness, you know, if you look at the descriptors of the beer when it arrived in India, it's described as having like a champagne-like character, very light in color, crystal clear. Sparkling was used a lot to describe the beer. My impression, and just to kind of throw this out there, and I think this is a pretty big supposition, but I believe that it's true. I think the beer had some Brettanomyces character in it as well.
I see.
Hmm. That would make sense.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
One thing that strikes me about the similarity in the recipes is that even though the recipe would be similar today, and the IBUs that you're talking about are similar, the intention was different. In other words, when we're putting 70 IBUs into an IPA, it's because we want to taste that. Like, that's what we expect. We want it to be fresh hop and some bitterness and all of those qualities. But letting a beer sit around for 12 months, those are some of the exact qualities that would fall off a little bit. The hop character, mm-hmm. even some of the bitterness. So even as the recipe was the same, the intention was very different than what it seems like we're trying to do when we produce an IPA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think it definitely wasn't meant to be a hop bomb. It looks to me like the beer was meant to be an elegant drink, and it was popular with the upper class in India. You know, the gentry that went over to India, not the soldiers. The soldiers apparently still drank porter, and porter was shipped to India as well. And that was one of the things that surprised me is, you know, porter survived the trip just fine. You know,
right.
and there was nothing wrong with a porter that made it over to India, and that's what the soldiers drank. But you know, the IPA really found a home with the people that were from the upper classes that had settled in India. And I don't think they were looking for a hop bomb. You know, I think they were looking for an elegant beer, and you know, and one that had some thirst quenching properties. That was refreshing, and you know, and I think that was kind of it. The hop character, you know, they were hopped to death, but I think the hop character was secondary to the clarity of the beer and just kind of the sparkling character of the beer.
So let me get this straight.
Yeah,
beer snobs liked IPAs back then. Beer snobs like IPAs now.
Well, I mean, it sounds like, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong or whatever, but it sounds like IPAs back then, it wasn't an IPA. It was it's still a pale ale.
Right.
So what happened? When did IPAs become something more than a pale ale? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Mitch, when did we start to evolve it into the IPA that we know today?
It looks like that happened after the Burton Brewers started making it. So if you look at the timeline of IPA, Hodgson, of course, the London brewer, who was a porter brewer in London, was really the brewer who was credited with developing the IPA. And based on everything that I found and everything that beer researchers and historians in England have found, it appears that beer was his standard stock pale ale, which means it was an aged pale ale, moderate strength, just beer that he shipped over to England alongside his porter. And it kind of took off. And then in about 1820, or thereabouts, the East India Company, who was dealing with the Bow Brewery at Hodgson, decided that Hodgson needed a little competition, and so they approached the Burton Brewers and Allsop in particular to develop their own version of the beer. And that appears to be when about, you know, once that really got going in 1830, 1840, thereabouts, where the Burton Brewers really started providing some pretty heavy competition to Bow. That seems to be when the East India Pale Ale name came into being. And I think it was 1835 in England when the first advertisement was seen describing the beer or calling the beer East India Pale Ale or India Pale Ale. And before that, it was just called Pale Ale or maybe Pale Ale as prepared for India.
Got it. Interesting stuff. We're talking about IPA, brewing techniques, recipes, and the evolution of India Pale Ale with Mitch Steele. He's the author and, of course, the brewmaster down there at Stone. Mitch, I got to take a quick break. Can you hang in there?
Yep.
All right, we'll talk more, and we'll get into some of the techniques that Mitch can teach us about IPAs when we come back. 888-401-BEER if you want to call in and ask questions. Otherwise, just hit the chat button, and Bevo's in there taking your questions. It's The Session. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Have you ever dreamed of taking a beer tour through Belgium or Germany, but weren't sure how to even start? Or were afraid of missing the best places and events? Or maybe you just wish you had a local insider to take you around? Well, there's only one American tour company featured in the Good Beer Guide to Belgium. Belgian Beer Me, your personal beer tour guide of Belgium and Germany, is ready to go at BelgianBeerMe.com and at BambergBeerMe.com. Founder Stu Stewart personally leads 8 tours a year to Belgium and Germany, visiting the finest breweries, beer cafes, abbeys, and festivals, stocking stuffers, birthday presents, and the best honeymoon ever. Couples or individuals love Belgian Beer Me beer tours. Your life is now. Sign up for a beer tour today at Belgian Beer Me or BambergBeerMe.com, because all that beer is not going to drink itself. Like both Belgian Beer Me and Bamberg Beer Me on Facebook to follow current and upcoming tours.
To the city. It's in ruins.
Only one man has the ancient knowledge to restore civilization.
I need a drink. Oh no, the liquor store's been ransacked.
You looking for beer, stranger? Boy, all the liquor got drunk up in the first 25 minutes of the apocalypse.
Wait, there's still some bottles over... Oh, no. Those are non-alcoholic beer.
I reckon you better stick to arrowroot tea and a desperate nomadic existence like the rest of us.
People, I'm a home brewer. I know how to make alcohol.
Oh, it can't be done.
Come with me if you want the beer. Okay, I'm gonna need some big plastic buckets.
He is the chosen one. The prophecies say that he's gonna get us wasted.
Someone start heating water. And
from the creators of Northern Brewer, the people who brought you 7.99 Brew Saver shipping, massive selection, and superior customer service comes...
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters, this is Jamel Zanishev, and I love a bold, hoppy beer when it spits resin in your face and makes you cry uncle. There are a lot of great hoppy beers out there, but at Heretic, we want to make something as bold, dank, and resiny as possible. We use hops at every chance we get, including multiple dry hop additions. The result is Heretic Evil Cousin. This light golden, 8% Imperial IPA has an easy malt character that helps take the edge off the massive bittering, but it takes a back seat to the in-your-face hop character. We make sure this beer finishes dry so the hops can jump out and slam you in the taste buds. If you can't get enough hoppy goodness, Evil Cousin is your cup of tea. Cheers.
What'd you get?
More brewing ingredients?
Yep. You know what I love about Brewmaster's Warehouse?
The $6.99 shipping.
Well, yeah, but...
Oh, the in-store classes for beginning brewers.
Yeah, that's cool, but...
Oh, the Brew Builder. Creating and saving your recipes online is awesome!
No, I'm... Yes, but...
The cheese-making supplies.
No.
Oh, the wine-making supplies. Oh, the distilling equipment and liquor flavorings.
All that stuff is awesome, yes, but what I really love is that the guy who runs it is totally hot. And that Brew Builder software is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Brewmaster's Warehouse brings you flat rate shipping on great equipment and ingredients to make beer, wine, cheese, and spirits at brewmasterswarehouse.com. And if you're in Georgia, stop by Brewmaster's Warehouse Monday through Saturday from 10 to 6. Visit brewmasterswarehouse.com today because it's totally hot.
Oh, yeah.
Are you a hophead? Beer lovers of all stripes will love Brewers Publications' latest release, IPA, Brewing Techniques, Recipes, and the Evolution of India Pale Ale by Mitch Steele.
I wanted to write a book that presented an accurate review of the history of IPA and also provided current technical brewing tips and recipe information. India Pale Ale is a style I love because it has a rich, fascinating history, and today it provides brewers a showcase for all the great new hop varieties that are available. I'm so proud of this book, and I know you'll enjoy all the recipes and thoughts from so many of the world's great IPA brewers.
IPA is available now from Brewers Publications at brewerspublications.com and your favorite homebrew store. Order your copy today and take your hop-forward beers to the next level.
American Homebrewers Association and Brewers Association members receive early notice and special discounts to most Brewers Publication releases. Visit brewerspublications.com to learn more and to find a schedule of author appearances. IPA by Mitch Steele. Get yours today.
What's funny is, brewers will say, yeah, I don't brew to style. I'm brewing my own beer. And it's like a German Pilsner, but it's black.
Yeah, it's a sports beer.
You know.
The home of live beer radio.
TheBrewingNetwork.com.
Because like beer,
radio shouldn't suck.
You're listening to The Session.
Into the session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, welcome back to the program. Thanks for sticking with us. We got a lot more to cover with Mitch. Of course, we're talking to Mitch Steele, who's the author of the brand new book, IPA, Brewing Techniques, Recipes, and the Evolution of India. Mitch, it sounds like the research portion of this book would be the best part of the project if you got to travel.
It was for me. I've never written a book before, obviously, and the actual writing of the book was very difficult, just trying to get everything down on paper. But the research part of it, just unleashed the beer geek in me, and it was great. There were actually three trips to England involved, one specifically for researching the book, where we spent the better part of 3 days in Burton-on-Trent and spent a fair amount of time in London. And, for me, as a guy that has loved beer for, well over 30 years, this was an amazing thing. And, being able to visit Burton-on-Trent with people that knew the town and knew the history of the town and were able to point out what all the buildings were in the town, what they used to be, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, that would be amazing. One of the other parts I can imagine might have been cool as a beer geek, when I went to Fuller's I got to meet the brewmaster, and he pulled out these old brewing logs. And they're like handwritten on what you, it's not quite parchment paper, but you kind
no,
of look that way.
That
you know,
old.
You know, there were
stone
old
tablets.
Like he showed us, you know, you open this book and he showed us like the day that they first tried a whirlpool method that had never been, that is very common now, that had never been used before. And that was fascinating to me. Did you get to look through with old brewmasters different recipes and things?
Yeah, I did, and actually, it's funny that you mentioned Fuller's because both John Keeling and Derek Prentice were just great. And you know, I've been to that brewery now 3 times, and every time they've just opened up everything and let us see anything we want to see. And John did the same thing with us. You know, when Steve and I were there, he pulled out the books and let me take pictures of the 1890 Fuller's IPA and the 1906 or something thereabouts Fuller's IPA and just looking at how they changed as far as the gravity, the you know, the inclusion of adjuncts that started after the, you know, the 1900s, and they were great. And you know what, I just want to say this, and it probably comes through in the book too, but you know, anybody that I asked for help on this book, be them brewers or beer researchers or historians or whatever, they were amazing. They just opened up everything and gave me anything that I had asked for, you know, to help me write a book that was going to be accurate. And the Fuller's folks were no exception to that. It was just amazing. And then we got to look at a bunch of brewing logs in what used to be called the old Bass Archives in Burton-on-Trent, and now it's part of the National Brewery Center, which is part of Coors. But you know, they have a room that's full of old brewing ledgers just like that, you know, and you open these things up, they look like an encyclopedia, and you open them up and the writing is just, you know, just amazing, and it's hard to read actually because it's just it's written so with so much flourish, you know. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it like if you look at your like not you not Mitch's but homebrew scratch sheets where we're taking our notes, handwriting is not, it is a lost art on us.
Oh yeah, it's all, they're all beer stained and things are smudged and who cares, you know. But yeah,
but Mitch's description, like with the flourish, is a very accurate description because you hardly picture the burly hands of a brewer writing that into a book.
I wonder if it's a reflection on the tools of the day, you know, where you had to take your pen and dip it into the ink, and it was more of a process, you know. So you, that's just the way you wrote. It was easier to handle, you know, so you don't smear your hand across the ink, rather than us just like fisting a Bic and just writing like a serial killer would.
Right.
4 ounces.
Yeah. We like to check boxes. We don't want to write.
We do want to check boxes. You're right.
You know, it was really cool. I got to do a beer in England with for the Weatherspoons pub chain at the Wadworth Brewery, which is kind of out near Stonehenge. And the brewmaster there is kind of an old school guy. He's a great guy. His name is Brian Yorston. And he recently started doing these brewing logs again. He goes, there's no other way. You know, if I do it on Excel or if I do it on Word, it could get lost. It could get destroyed. But I'm gonna handwrite every brew into this book. And he had one of these books, and he was doing that. And I'm like, really, dude?
It's
get, you know, carbonite.
2000s here, and he's taking this nice pen and writing these nice recipes down. And
right,
you know, it was you know, that kind of stuff was just incredible. And getting access to it and. You know, the fact that John and Derek showed us everything that we wanted to see at Fuller's, you know, and they were brewing IPAs. They weren't even sure if they were shipping their IPAs out of the country, you know, but they were brewing them.
Right.
And, you know, in Burton-on-Trent, we were pulling up brewing ledgers from the 1830s, and it was just nuts, you know, seeing this stuff and realizing that it was almost 200 years old. And these people were writing out the recipes, and I, you know, to be honest, I had to get help to try and decipher them.
Wow.
But, you know, there was some really good information there.
And I think it's particularly fascinating when it's your profession that you're looking into like that.
Yeah.
I really like history anyway. I'm kind of a history buff, so I can definitely go to a museum and things like that and be into it and be fascinated. But there's something about looking at these brewing logs at the generations before you doing what you do now, or at least that you're a part of now, that was really just something else. Like the amount of enthusiasm I didn't even realize I had, you know, looking at these things.
It'd be like us retracing the steps of the first lazy person.
Yeah, we would be so connected with that. You know? It would be so fascinating.
Oh my God, dude, Chet got out of work this way. Wow, that's like the first time that the fucking call-in sick card got pulled on a boss. That's amazing.
Yeah, where's that museum?
I love it. It would be built, but, you know, it takes time.
I thought about it, but you know, got lazy and decided not to.
Go ahead.
You know what was great about those logs was just seeing... You know how they designated what hops they were using and what malt they were using, and then also the tasting notes that they wrote down. You know, when they were getting ready to transfer a beer into barrels or after it had been barreled for 2 months, and just you know looking at how the beer tasted and. You know, and just what their thoughts were on the beer as it was aging. I thought that was probably the coolest part of the whole deal.
Oh, so you read the log. So I just looked at them, and then I moved on.
I go, wow, that's really great.
Yeah. No,
you want to go to get a beer? Because I'm really thirsty.
Really thirsty, yeah. No, you're right. Those descriptions, that would be a fascinating part. And I do remember the designations of the hops and the malts and things. You know, we have names for all of it now. Then it was just designated by the plot of land that it came from.
Yeah, right.
So it was essentially a number. Maybe a name. It might be a family name and a number, right, Mitch?
Right. And you know, what was really cool was, you know, when we were at Fuller's and John Keeling was pointing out, you know, the fact that they were using Oregon hops and California hops in their beers.
Wow.
You know, without any varietal designations at all. But, you know, back in the late 1800s, you know, British brewing was just exploding and they couldn't get all of their ingredients from England. You know, they, you know, if there was a bad crop year in hops or malt, they couldn't get everything they needed from England itself. And so they had to bring in ingredients from other countries. And I think that was as cool as anything, you know, seeing that they were using Oregon hops in an 1890 IPA or a California hops. And then of course you know, the question is what hop is that?
Right.
And continuing that research a little bit, it looks like it was probably cluster from the West Coast, or later in the century or into the early 1900s, it was probably some sort of Fuggle derivative.
Got it. Yeah, see, that is fascinating. Wow. It shrinks up the world for you a little bit there.
Oh, yeah. So, Mitch, you can find some of these, you've translated some of these ideas into recipes in the book that a person could potentially make today?
Yeah, I tried to... take the recipes that I had and just kind of make them very basic. So in the book, I'm going to what I listed was the percentages of the grain and the hops in pounds per barrel and ounces per gallon type of ratio. So I didn't actually like tell somebody how to brew a 5 gallon batch, but you know, the way it's detailed out. You know, if you've brewed any beer at all, you should be able to do the calculations to figure it out for your own brewing system. You know, so the malt are all listed in percentages, you know, like extra white or extra pale or white malt 100% and Golding's 100%. That one's easy, but
I could do that.
When you get into some of the later years, you know, when they start using adjuncts in some of the English beers and things like that, I basically just listed things as a percentage, or if I had pounds per barrel, I converted that into ounces per gallon or grams per liter, so that people who develop their own recipes could just take those numbers and plug them in.
Okay. Well, that brings me to a couple questions I have from listeners on here, and maybe we can figure out, you know, what kind of other info is in the book. One of our listeners wrote in the beginning, he wanted to know if Mitch's book covers the effect of pH on hops. So I guess, does it get into some of the science around hops and IPAs?
Yeah, just real briefly, you know, the fact that you get more hop extraction out of a higher pH in the brew house, but you get better conversion, enzymatic conversion at a lower pH is mentioned. You know, it's mentioned, it's not dialed in a whole lot, you know, just because I didn't think that was really kind of the point of the book. But definitely mentioned the things that impact hop utilization and hop flavor. How you maximize hop flavor. That's definitely covered, and a little bit of the science behind that is covered as well.
Okay, and that actually kind of covers the next question too. Tom is in the chat room, and he says that the IPAs I brew lack hop flavor. I've played with the grain bill, water, late hopping, etc. Still having trouble. Will Mitch's book help me troubleshoot an issue like this?
I think we should call them IPAs.
Yes, IPAs.
Yeah, IPAs.
I hope it helps. I definitely dive into a lot of the theory that that brewers have developed over the years, and not just myself, but a lot of the really some of the best IPA brewers in the world right now, what they do to maximize hop flavor. And I may not call them out by name, except if their recipe's in the book. But there's a chapter on developing your recipe, and I think the hopping part appeared in Zymergy this summer, but there's a lot more to that chapter than just that one piece. And the idea is, how do you get the hop character you want in an IPA? And there's a lot of things you can do. Just for making your beer very dry, minimizing the use of crystal malts, trying to add hops at every step in the process, or where you should add your hops, that kind of thing. And I definitely get into that, whether it's enough to help somebody who's having trouble getting hop character in their beer or not, I can't say, but hopefully it provides some pointers.
Good guideline. Okay. And then in thinking about that, were you saying that it kind of helps you, guide and narrow down to the type of hop character you're looking for, do you kind of break apart the different types of hop character there are? I mean, bitterness as a bitter IPA as opposed to a really, what I would call a hop forward IPA that lacks bitterness. Do you cover the kind of distinction between the different hop characters?
Yeah, I think I do. Talk a lot about late hopping and not adding it at the beginning of the boil, and ways to maximize your hop flavor at the end of the boil or in the whirlpool or however it is, and just hop selection itself. What kind of hops do you want to use? What kind of hops do you want to use for your flavor hops? What kind of hops do you want to use for your aroma hops? What kind of hops do you want to use for bittering hops? They're not all the same. And, to use a hop that's a highly flavored hop for your bittering hop, you're not going to get the flavor out of it that you want, a lot of it is based on my experience with brewing hoppy beers and trying to maximize hop flavor. But there are tidbits in there from a lot of other brewers as well. And, hopefully it gives some guidelines. I'm a big believer in using a fairly neutral hop and for bittering and then just loading up on the back end to get your flavor. And a lot of that comes through in the book. But, whether that jives with what everybody's trying to do or not, I can't say.
Right. The other thing I'm hoping it covers, I'm sure it does, and I think everybody in this room will agree, we all hope it covers it, is the use of crystal malts and or adjuncts and things like that accurately, like how to figure out how to use these things. Because I would say, I think that there was a time where I might have said to people, oh, I don't like any IPAs that have crystal malts in them. But that was me being retarded. The truth is, proper use of crystal malts in an IPA can be so great, and improper use can really ruin a beer.
Yeah. I've always said 40% or higher of the darkest you can find. And then that way, I just fuck everyone else up on their IPAs, man.
So that you win.
Yeah.
Well, you and I are on separate pages here, right?
Right. I don't know about that.
I definitely address that. I'm definitely in the camp that minimizing or using sparingly crystal malts and kind of the lighter color range for IPA is a good thing. And it's not so much when the beer is fresh, because when the beer is fresh, you get everything. You get the crystal malt, you get the hops, you get everything that you want. But when the beer is 60 days old, it's been in the bottle for 60 days. That crystal malt starts to change and the hop character starts to fade, and then you get this nutty, malty, crystally kind of caramelly kind of beer that's not you know, what you originally intended. So I'm a proponent of using small amounts of crystal malt in an American IPA and using the lighter colored versions. And I talk about that at length in the book.
Fantastic.
Question, Mitch. You'd given us a preview of some great data at the NHC when you talked about the content for this book. And one of those things that I really liked was you showed us data of the convergence of the style between East Coast and West Coast and some basic statistics comparing some IPAs that were taken off the shelf that you had tested at Stone, like original gravity, finishing gravity, IBU, SRM. Is that data included in the book? And could you comment on that? What sort of conclusions you could draw from that?
Yeah, the tables are included in the book. And really, you know, what I was trying to do with that table was show that, you know, was trying to decide or prove one way or another whether the East Coast IPAs were different than the West Coast IPAs, because there's a lot of talk about that. You know, West mm-hmm. Coast IPAs are more hop forward and East Coast IPAs are more malt forward. And there is some truth in that. If you look at it from the standpoint of about 15 years ago, I think you could say that there's some truth in that. But I think in general, recently, you know, over the last 10 years or so, there's been kind of a move towards more of you know, this hop forward IPA. And, you know, one of the contributors to the book was David Yerington from Smutty Nose Brewing Company in Portsmouth, and they make one of the best IPAs that I've found in the United States, the Smutty Nose IPA. Finest Kind, I think, is what it's called. But you know, it was a beer that was in my refrigerator a lot when I lived in New Hampshire. And David said, you know, that a lot of the East Coast brewers approached IPA brewing that, you know, you add more hops, you have to add more malt and more crystal malt to balance that out. And I think that's kind of the generalization that people make when they talk about East Coast versus West Coast IPAs, because West Coast IPAs are pretty light on the crystal malt, and the idea there is to let the hops really shine. I think that's not necessarily true anymore, and certainly, you know, brewers like Smutty Nose and Harpoon and some of those folks that make IPAs on the East Coast are making IPAs that don't have a lot of specialty malts in them and really are very hop forward along the same way as a West Coast IPA. But yeah, I try to touch on that and dive into it just a little bit, and some of the recipes will show that, you know, there are some beers on the East Coast that have a fair amount of crystal malt in them, but you know, that's it's just a different kind of beer.
Right. Okay.
Cool stuff.
Question came in from the chat room from Fierce Beard. He says, "I've heard it postulated that the churning motion of being at sea could affect the condition of the beer upon arrival in India." Did you?
I've heard it postulated.
Any of that in your research, Mitch?
Typing over his monocle.
Well, you know, there's you know, early on, it took 6 months to get the beer to India from England. You know, I mean, up until about the 1850s, you know, it took a long time, and the beer was flat. You know, when it went on the boat, I mean, it had already gone through two fermentations. It had gone through the primary fermentation. It had gone through a secondary fermentation in the summer. And the English yeast cultures had many, many strains in them. And some of them were activated later in the game. And so the churning motion certainly, you know, even though the beers were meant to be very dry and fully fermented out, something happened on that boat trip. The beer arrived and it had a sparkling condition, so something was going on, and I'm certain that the churning motion had something to do with it. Now, you know, just reading Pete Brown's book, he's an English writer, and he was a big inspiration to me. His book is called Hops and Glory, and it came out a few years ago, and he's a guy that actually had a beer, an old style IPA brewed for him. He put it in a cask and then took it on a trip and went down the canals from Burton-on-Trent to London, and then went on big ships and floated over to India with his beer. And he's one of those guys that says, you know, the temperature of the water, the temperature of the outside conditions make no difference. The hold of the boat is steaming hot the whole trip. Hmm. And I tend to trust that, you know, because he actually did it, you know, and he knows what he's talking about. And I don't think that the technology of building ships has gotten any you know, to the point where it was better, you know, in the 1800s, where they can control the temperature better. I'm sure it was probably worse than what it was when he went on it. So, you know, you think about the hold of that ship, it was hotter than hell. And then these, you know, you got the rocking motion in the barrels, and the brewers were making the beer as flat as possible so the barrels wouldn't explode. But then when they arrived in India, they were sparkling. Something was going on
right
in those barrels. And, you know, whether it was the motion of the boat or the temperature or secondary, ferment or tertiary fermentation, you know, some sort of Brettanomyces fermentation or what, nobody really knows for sure, but something was going on.
Sure.
Well, it's because of the motion of the ocean. I mean, everyone knows that.
That's right. You know? It's always the motion of the ocean.
What sort of temperatures were we think talking about here, like 90 degrees or so, higher than that?
And you know, the definitely upper double digits.
Is that,
you know,
right? Wow.
You know, 80s, 90s degrees. I mean, you consider the fact that these beers were shipped in the late summer and early fall from London, and then they went down through the equator. I mean, you're looking at 90 degrees.
It's a lot of summer weather.
Yeah. It's like JP's house in the summer. He won't turn on the AC till it reaches 112.
Hey, I'm on a very tight budget.
Right. You're just making historical IPA in your house. Yeah. Yeah. Big barrels in your living room.
In my shorts. Yeah,
so now when you say sparkling condition, I'm thinking like bottle bomb kind of thing.
Well, know, like, it's certainly that kind
of... probably like, going on, right?
Like Mitch mentioning earlier, like the Brettanomyces that he thinks is in there. I mean, it has to be something like that. Or it doesn't have to. You'd think it has to be something like that.
Yeah, I think it is because of all the pains that the brewers went through to get the yeast out of beer. This was predated filtering of beer, but they were running the beer through flannel and all sorts of stuff to try and get the yeast out so the barrels wouldn't explode.
How hipster of them.
See, all of a sudden my carpet filtered porter doesn't sound exactly. So crazy, does it?
Well, we should have called that a historical thing.
You were just doing historical brewing, Justin. Yeah. Come on.
Flannel. It's amazing. Wow. I bet you, Mitch, were there other kind of weird techniques that you found like that you were surprised by?
Yeah, there were a lot.
Okay.
I think, one of the things that I thought was really cool about historical brewing was they would, instead of sparging didn't really develop in England until the mid-1700s. It was a Scottish technique, or mid-1800s, rather. The Scottish invented sparging and laddering in the 1700s, but it didn't really take off in England until about 100 years later. So they, what they would do is instead of sparging, they would just draw all the wort off the grain and then boil it, and then they'd mash in another batch of water on top of the grain. And so it was called multiple mashing, and they create these different worts of different strengths, and then they blend them all together or blend them together to get the gravity that wanted in the starting beer. Another thing that was kind of cool, there were some people really, really strong high gravity beers, and what they would do is after that first mash was done, they'd send all that wort that they created back in and mash it again with the same grain and try and get, and they would be able to get that gravity up to above 25 degrees Plato or 1.1 specific gravity. So they were doing these recycling of the wort into the grain to try and build up the gravity of the beer. And I thought that was pretty cool stuff. You know, that's not something that people are doing today. And you know, it was different and so out of my ballpark that I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There were brewers that were recycling hops. They were pressing hops off the wort. You know, they'd put them in bags and then they'd press all the wort out and then they'd use the hops again. You know, that kind of stuff.
Okay. That is interesting stuff. And now that you mentioned sparging, I misspoke earlier, but it's exactly what I was talking about when I said I was reading in the logs about like the first day of technique. It wasn't a whirlpool technique. Yeah. It was a sparging technique. And before, like the day before in the log, they were doing the techniques that Mitch is talking about.
Oh, wow.
But the day of the log that I think John showed me was the first time using this new sparging technique from Scotland, right?
I wonder if they fought the wart afterwards like the Scottish clearly must have.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So, I guess, was that a statement about the thriftiness of the Scottish people in terms of getting that extra extract out of those grains?
I think a lot of the ingredients that were going to Scotland were coming through the British folks, and they were charging them a lot for it. So, they had to be really efficient.
Good point.
Yeah. Hops in particular were notorious for that. I don't know if grains were, but hops were for sure.
Just a comment on Scottish brewing. I mean, they were really at the forefront of technology for a long time, one of the big surprises, we were talking about kind of surprises that came out of the research of this, was that Edinburgh was a huge IPA center. I mean, it rivaled Burton-on-Trent for brewing IPA and shipping it to India in the 1800s. And I don't think people realize that, but, you know, Younger's Brewery was a huge IPA producer in Edinburgh. And a lot of the soldiers in India apparently were from Scotland. And so, you know, those Scottish IPAs found great favor in India. And they were probably second only to Burton-on-Trent as far as the total volume of IPA that was produced in the world at that time.
Wow.
You think we're going to start seeing these kind of old school original recipes crop up every now and then, maybe with some English brewers, or I can imagine some Americans would definitely want to, you know, try brewing these traditional style IPAs. But I wonder if in England anyone really, not that anyone cares, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, callous, but I wonder if anyone cares about like the brewing history.
You know, Mean Times IPA, and you know, they're located just near London. Their IPA is definitely inspired by the historical IPA. And if you've ever had Mean Time IPA, it's pale malt, and it's East Kent Goldings hops and a little bit of Fuggles hops. And they did a lot of research, and actually I talked to them quite a bit, you know, when I was researching this book. Alistair Hook and the folks at Mean Time, they do a nice job, and they know their IPA history. There are some people that are out there brewing some of these historical recipes, and I talked to them a lot when I was researching this book. One of the people is Ron Pattinson, who does a beer blog called Shut Up About Barclay Perkins, and he goes into those brewing logs that we were talking about earlier, and he translates those and puts them out as homebrew recipes.
Nice.
There's a guy named Kristen England.
Yep.
I believe he's in Minneapolis or somewhere.
Yep.
And he brews a lot of Ron's recipes that Ron uncovers from these archives and puts out the recipes and puts out comments about them. So it's being done. Dan Paquette at Pretty Things in Massachusetts is doing, working with Ron Pattinson and some other people to brew some of these old historic recipes.
The mild. I had their mild recently.
And, you know, our 14th anniversary IPA that we brewed a couple of years ago was definitely based on some of the research that we had done, you know, and it was all this extra pale malt. We changed the hopping quite a bit, and we bumped up the gravity a bit, you know, to make it a double IPA, but it was definitely inspired by what we were learning about these historical IPAs.
I would say that by a sheer lack of brewing techniques and quality sanitation practices, that all my beers are historical. everything I brew.
They're noteworthy.
Very old.
And they're best to be left in the past.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. We're running out of time, Mitch, but I did want to ask you, you know, as you're getting to meet with some of these older brewmasters and look through all of these things with them, did you get a chance to share Stone beer maybe with people who didn't know it existed?
Yeah, I did. You know, our trip to Burton-on-Trent, we took over a couple of cases of beer with us. And the Burton-on-Trent trip was amazing because we were Mark Dorber, who used to run the White Horse Pub in London. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he's, you know, a pretty famous publican. I ran into him on a trip to England, told him that we were working on this, and he said, hey, look me up. Come back over. Look me up. We'll set up a real nice symposium. And he did. Hmm. He and Roger Putman from Bass just put together this amazing visit when Steve and I were in Burton-on-Trent. And we got to sit down with a couple of retired Bass brewmasters and a couple of retired Marston's brewmasters. And these guys are just, you know, they're amazing, and they know so much about brewing English beer. And we sat with them for 2 or 3 days and just talked about all this stuff that we've been talking about tonight, you know, about IPA and about how the beer was made back in the 1800s. And these guys have had the ability to go back and just working with the breweries that they've been working with, you know, understand the history of the breweries and how they brew their beer. And so it was pretty incredible. Last day we were there, we went to a pub for lunch, and I finally broke out all the beer. And at this point, you know, I'd already given some beer away, but I had Stone Ruination IPA, and they all loved it. They thought that was great. And I got a lot of nice comments on that. And then I broke out a Sublimely Self-Righteous Ale, which was kind of fun, you know, this big double black IPA.
Right.
Yeah, they weren't so keen on that one. They're like, oh my God, what the hell is this? This is, you know, and you know, it's funny because they didn't really have any idea what was going on in America. I mean, they look at America as being lager brewers, you know, Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors. That's American brewing to these folks. And I think they were kind of surprised to see what we were whipping up, you know.
Yeah, once we left the colonies, they don't give a shit.
Right. Well, I'm glad you gave them one that you liked, because otherwise they'd think, wow, they brew that light shit and this really dark shit.
Yeah. And wonder they're all crazy over there.
Right.
So it's an acquired taste, you know.
Right. That's cool. It sounds like a great experience you've had getting to write this book, yeah. Aside from the work of writing it, of course.
You know, it was... It's been one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my career. I've got to say that in all honesty. The research part of the book and putting the book together was great. The writing of the book was tough. The editing of the book was really tough. But I gotta hand it to the folks at Brewers Publications. They know what they're doing. And you know, it took a lot of weekends and a lot of instant emailing back and forth to try and get it dialed in. But you know, they knew what needed to be done. And they were able to take my scribblings and put it and make it into a really good book, I think. And so, I hope people dig it. I hope people enjoy the book, and I hope people enjoy the recipes that we've got in there. You know, we've got 48 recipes. We've got recipes from some of the best IPA brewers in the world right now, and I'm really excited about that.
Well, it looks like a fantastic book. I'm sure people are going to be stoked about it. I'm also quite positive that your wife is stoked that you're done writing it.
Yes, I think so.
She's like, great book, Mitch. Now go mow the fucking lawn.
Yeah.
All right, Mitch. Well, thank you so much. IPA, brewing techniques, recipes, and the evolution of India Pale Ale. It's available now. It will be in our store soon, but in the meantime, you can go get it in Amazon and various other homebrew shops and different places. You can order direct through the Brewers Association, and members of the AHA and the BA always get first access to that kind of stuff. So, Mitch, as always, man, thanks for spending time with us.
Absolutely. It's always fun.
Okay, you got an open door here, so let us know when you come back to the Bay Area.
I will.
Cheers, Mitch. Take care.
Cheers.
All right, there you go. The great Mitch Steele. Never
awesome.
Never disappointing.
Very cool.
I predict
here that it is.
Even JP will read this book.
Oh, he's going to read this book. For sure. 100%.
Imagine the... please don't read it until NHC next year, and then sit right in the lobby of the hotel reading the book on IPAs. So
we need,
a
picture of this.
They just won't leave you alone, I'm sure of it. You know, Mitch is the right choice for this book, not just because of his brewing skills, but he's a brainy guy. You needed someone who's not lazy and who's got the brain to really dig in and do the research, because what a disservice it would have been
if I did it
to an already already mythical and sort of sordid past of a beer, right, that we've already gotten wrong. What a disservice it would have been to re-perpetuate those myths.
Definitely.
You know, so he really had to get it right.
Back when I came on this show the first time in 2008 and we talked about IPAs, I was really trying to put together some information about IPA. There really wasn't a book like this, a resource like this. I think people were looking for that.
Right.
I'm glad that they found somebody like Mitch who has the passion and the experience and is a hugely accomplished brewer.
Yeah.
To take and tie that info together. Well, it's a signature style of American brewing in many ways right now, the craft brewing in particular. I mean, we need a go-to resource.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I think it's one of the final frontiers in historical brewing. We're both scratching our arm under our shirt. we've done the porter. We had all the style books that the AHA put out a long time ago, and they were more like pamphlets, really. Our novellas, but
and they had the pale ale book, which covered IPA, but IPA is an in-depth subject enough in itself. You can do a single book on that easily.
Well, and the pale ale is a significant. There's other significant styles, but I would, I think you could say none more significant right now.
Exactly,
and to the growth of American craft beer, for that matter, than the IPA.
Absolutely. Yeah, 6% of the market.
Yeah. I'm actually writing one on wit. It's going to be called Wit Wacka Wacka.
Wild world of Wacka Wacka.
Yeah, it's highly anticipated. I don't have a publisher yet, but I've started my research.
Yeah.
Ironically, I'm allergic to wheat beers in that way. But you know what? I'm dedicated to the cause, and I think Wit Wacka Wacka is going to be a big hit.
All the tasting notes are just aroma.
Yes. Sir.
By Justin Crossley, an authority. Yeah. Doesn't say on what, but
JP,
an authority.
Yeah. And I mean this sincerely.
Yeah.
Would you please write the foreword to Wit Wacka Wacka?
Yes, I will. Finally.
Finally, someone has
I've been putting myself out there for years.
Wonderful.
I feel like a prostitute that never gets picked.
From Jason Petro, CEO of Very Social Media.
I have four paragraphs written already, so it's coming up quick.
Well, all right. Yeah. When did you start?
Like 4 years ago.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not a bad pace.
I don't think so.
At least a paragraph a year.
Well, you can't work on a vacation, so I feel it's a perfectly appropriate pace.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And, I think it's going to take me to a lot of great places. It's going to take me to Safeway.
Yes.
I think, maybe the farmer's market when I need chamomile. I think it's really going to take me to a lot of places as I research this book.
You are one entire gay idiot.
Who's she talking to?
I don't know. I think she's looking at Sam.
I don't think she realized her microphone's on.
No,
Bevo, your microphone's on.
She's on the phone with Sam.
She's on the phone right now.
Right.
Call her.
How do you know when Bevo's microphone's on?
She's having a good time.
Yeah,
that's how you know.
You can hear the two-stroke motor. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a little bit of beer news to do. Also, we're going to be talking about the other side of IPA, not IPA. Now, how do you like that?
Everything that IPA is not.
All right, it's The Session. We'll be right back. Hang in there.
You're listening to the Brewcasters, on the Brewing Network. What does craft beer mean to you? Is it a delicious way to support your town's local brewer? Or perhaps it's the perfect beverage to pair with those delicious meals at your favorite restaurant and at home. Regardless of whether you're thinking of pints or pairings, pilsners or porters, craftbeer.com is the site where craft beer lovers come together to learn and share. Craftbeer.com is brought to you by the Brewers Association and celebrates the best of American craft beer and its brewers. Craftbeer.com is the best place to find craft beer events, recipes, great feature stories, the most up-to-date brewery listings, and resources for your next beer tasting or dinner, like style guidelines, pairing mats, and charts. Get the inside scoop on new beer releases and special events from today's craft beer insiders, and chime in to share your own knowledge, perfect pairings, road trips, recipes, and more. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer. By popular vote from the Northwest Brewing News, HopTech has been voted the best homebrew shop in Northern California. Yeah!
Serving homebrewers for nearly 30 years in Dublin, California, HopTech carries more than 40 different kinds of hops and more than 60 different grains. Malt extract, spices and sugars, hop oils and extracts. Open every day except Wednesday or shop online anytime at hoptech.com or call 1-800-DRY-HOPS, 1-800-379-4677. With in-store classes almost every Saturday, huge selection, and a dedicated commitment to their customers, HopTech is one of the longest-running and passionate homebrew stores, period. And now, by popular vote, the best homebrew shop in Northern California. And don't forget their 15% military discount. HopTech. Visit today at hoptech.com. White Labs, the leader in fresh liquid yeast, wants to hear from you. Announcing the White Labs Yeast Hotline. They invite your comments now. Call in and talk about your favorite yeast or your favorite beer to make with a White Labs vial. Call 347-MY-YEAST.
Hi, I'm Nava Parker, head of laboratory operations for White Labs. We make all kinds of yeast strains for craft brewers and home brewers. I want to know what your favorite White Labs yeast strain is and why you love it.
White Labs brings your beer everything it needs for a perfect fermentation. Plus, check out whitelabs.com, the customer club, and now the White Labs Hotline, 347-MY-YEAST. That's 347-699-3278. 347-MY-YEAST. And accept the invitation to talk White Labs yeast with Nava Parker herself.
Call in now and tell me about your favorite yeast.
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Tonight is the night.
We bring the creature to life, Dr. Blitzenstein?
Yes, J.P. Gore. Everything is perfect for my next fermented creation.
But, Doctor, the storm is too far away. We'll never have enough power to isomerize the creature's alpha acid.
Yes, J.P. Gore, we will. For I have in my possession the Tower of Power!
Blickman's new Tower of Power is the evolution of automation. Control hot liquor, sparge, and mash temps like a pro. The Tower of Power is a high-quality gas-fired rim system that works with your current brewing setup. With ultra-precision, the tower can hold your mash to 0.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Precision and repeatability. The Tower of Power is the answer to automatic, fast ramp times. See more at BlickmanEngineering.com. Bring your next creation to life with the Tower of Power.
Dr. Blickmanstein, with the Tower of Power, you can probably give me an afternoon at the pub to enjoy a pint.
Don't be silly, J.P. Gore. We have beer to brew. That's it. I've had it. I am never putting hops in my beer again.
What? Why?
It's just too ridiculous. Insane prices, stupid contract, high shipping costs, crappy selection.
Dude, you need Nico Brew.
Nico Brew will rock your f***ing face right the f*** off your f***ing skull. $5 shipping to all 50 states, plus fantastic international rates, get you low prices on Nico Brew's great selection of hops and more. Whether you're a home brewer, a pro brewer, or a homebrew shop owner, Nico Brew can get you the hops you need in increments big and small, single orders, spot buys, or full contracts. And there's only one place to join the uber special Secret Elite Bare Bones Club, where you'll get the best deals anywhere.
Holy f***ing shit!
NicoBrew.com. NikoBrew. Nico Brew, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
Mix me your 100 grain amber recipe and I'm going to eat it. And then it can ferment in my gut. It totally works. The beer is almost identical to the grain sandwich.
Your colon won't know what hit it.
The home of live beer radio.
TheBrewingNetwork.com.
Because like beer,
radio shouldn't suck. You're listening to
The Session.
Beer.
This is The Session.
All right, welcome back to the program. Thanks for sticking with us, and thanks to Mitch Steele for hanging out with us. He's always very generous with his time. If you think about it, the man is in the process of one of the busiest things he could be doing, finishing up and putting in a new brewery into Stone and dialing that in, and he spent time with us this week. So I just, you know, thank you very much. I always appreciate that. I think a lot of times people don't realize, by the way, that, you know, brewers obviously work all week and then spend, you know, 2 hours with us on a Sunday night, and they should always be thanked for that. If you take that for granted as a listener, yes, we have a lot of access here at the BN, and I think we've done a good job of bringing people in, but it's always because they're willing to spend the couple of hours dicking around with us on an afternoon or an evening like this. So thanks to all of them, and thanks again to Mitch Steele for doing that. Hey, I wanted to tell you real quick about That Brewery Game, a sponsor of ours, and they've been with us for a little while. You can go to thatbrewerygame.com right now, and if you just can't get enough of the beer entertainment and the brewing world, you know, you can do That Brewery Game. I highly recommend doing it at work. I mean, fuck it. You're not working anyway.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, rather than spend your time on...
you're not sleeping.
And you're probably listening to us, which is already...
Go on over to thatbrewerygame.com. You can sign up for a free account right now, and basically what you do is it's kind of a game where you are a burgeoning brewer, and you can as you advance you go from like a garage brewer to a small brewery, you get on up to like larger brewer. You can create your own labels, and you actually produce virtual beer by going through real brewing techniques.
That's right.
And kind of what I mean by that is you do have to know how to do it. So if, for example, I go play That Brewery Game right now and I make a beer with the same practices that I do at home, it will not be a very successful beer because the program kind of knows how to make beer.
Yeah, well, there's no carpet.
There's no carpet. Yeah. But so you have to get like your techniques right in order for the beer to be good, in order for you to grow. Anyhow, obviously you can see it's really kind of, it's a role-playing game, if you will, JP.
I will, actually, a lot.
And,
thank you for asking.
But for brewers.
Yeah.
You know, so That Brewery Game, it's pretty cool. I was reading through some of you can go, there's like a virtual pub that you can go into, and you can see what the brewers are talking about. They're really kind of serious about it. Like, they'll talk about their different labels that they've produced. You can kind of see different examples. They'll also help coach each other about how to produce, you know, the next good beer and how to grow as a brewer. I even saw some of them in there going like, hey, I finally got to go over and try Blackbeard's beer. And I was like, what the hell is he talking about? Go try it. But there are ways within the game that you can go try other people's beer. Virtual beer.
Like your little guy drinks the little guy's beer.
I guess. Yeah. You got to go check it out.
Yeah.
So it's thatbrewerygame.com. It's free to sign up for an account. And I don't know, it looks like a hoot. And like I said, what else are you doing? You're not at work anyway.
And let's face it, Facebook is utterly boring until November 2nd. So it's just, you know.
Right.
Ignore it.
What happens on November 2nd?
It's after the election, I think is what he said.
Yeah, a third of the country votes. Yeah.
I don't know. I still don't know what I don't follow.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, you're a felon. You wouldn't.
I might be a felon. No. I don't think I'm a felon.
No?
I don't think I've ever done a felony.
Yeah, you own guns, so.
I legally own guns.
Well, you couldn't if you were a felon. If you had done a felony.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
That's a good point. All right. You know what we haven't done in a while is beer news.
Oh.
And I like doing beer news because I think it keeps us up to date on some of the things that are happening.
On beer.
Yeah. So let's do some beer news. Beer news is brought to you today by our wonderful friends over at craftbeer.com. This is the craftbeer.com beer news. And the craftbeer.com website, by the way, they are masters at the beer news. So if you're looking to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening in craft beer, craftbeer.com is the place to go. So why don't we do some beer news in honor of them? Chokey McChokesuck.
I was trying to
prep. You're all primed up now?
I was trying to prep and do that, and I breathe as I drink water.
You have to get that large object out of your mouth.
Sucking air into your ass.
Which is why I don't swim very often.
I think the problem is that you're drinking water.
Yeah. I don't feel well.
No?
No, I spent the whole day thinking I was having a heart attack, so I'm a little wound up over that,
You got a little tickle in your butthole?
A little bit. Ball shrank a little bit. Anyway, who's beer news brought to us by
craftbeer.com? Yes! Go ahead. What do we have today?
President Obama's stockpile of White House made and branded homebrew has been creating a buzz. They're making three different beers, a honey porter, a honey ale, and a honey blonde, all of which include honey from the beehives on the South Lawn. after a Beer Geek rally, some petitions citing, and even an absurd Freedom of Information Act request, which the White House isn't actually subject to. The recipes were released on September 1st. Conspiracy alert, Moscow puts in. The recipe for the Honey Blonde allegedly couldn't be located. So the only recipes out there are for the porter and the ale.
I don't think that's a conspiracy. That sounds like a homebrewer to me. Yeah. can't find his recipe.
Sorry, I can't find it.
He accidentally spilled the wort on it, so he had to throw it away.
He has a link to the recipes. I don't know if you want to go through them or not.
Well, not necessarily, but I am glad to hear that the recipes are out, because I do remember in the last week or two, everyone's been clamoring, we want these recipes.
Yeah.
And it seemed for a second like they weren't going to be given, but maybe they just needed a minute to put it together.
Well, so. they were saying, you know... you need 29,000 people to sign the petition, and I think what they were doing
is the White House said that?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think what they were doing is just giving themselves time to produce a video. They made a little video about it, because I think like 2,000 people signed the thing, and they released the recipes anyway.
Who is the beer being made for?
The White House guests and staff.
Do they serve it at
Obama
dinners or something?
I wouldn't know.
It's just 5-gallon batches. So
yeah.
And why? Why?
I don't know.
Is somebody in the chef. Administration?
I imagine somebody in the chef.
The administration,
chef's a fan.
Yep.
Yeah, the sous chef, exactly. I think, or one of the assistant chefs.
And that they're the ones brewing it?
Yeah.
I see.
I'm working on my channels to get an interview.
Yeah, I would love an interview.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Although they actually, I'm sure, research programs before they allow people to go get interviewed.
Well, I'll tell you, if the chef is a home brewer, they know who we are. So, you know, they just, we'll figure it out.
That's a good point. Maybe he's just waiting for the phone call, for that matter. If he's a home brewer, he's just,
hello.
Homebrewers just wait to hear from us. I don't know if you knew that.
They just sit. We find you eventually.
They just sit around waiting to hear. I don't know. I think it's rad that that it's happening in the White House. I guess like I said, I just didn't know why. I didn't know if it was a publicity stunt or...
It's probably the chef's just interest in home brewing, and maybe the honey in the garden thingy kind of made the connection there.
Well, it started to become a bigger deal again, because on some campaign stop in Iowa, Obama had a person in a cafe or something asking, hey, can I have one of these White House homebrews? And he went back into the bus and produced one of these things. They had a box of them on the bus, and he gave the guy a bottle of the White House homebrew, and the guy was obviously, for good reason, impressed that they just gave him one, which is kind of cool.
So Barack Obama is an alcoholic, is what you're saying.
Well, they got White House beer on the bus. He's got to drink his own brand, I guess. You know?
But from what I know through, you know, meeting, well, not meeting the president, but going to the viewing and hearing kind of how these presidential stops get set up, that could have just been a plant.
Right. Yeah, that's true, too.
There's a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, good point.
But anyway.
Mr. President, this is your chef, and I just made a new... I'm a home brewer, and I made this for you. It's called Baroctic Porter.
Now, more than ever...
I made it for you.
I need to drink this beer.
Yes, I made it in your name, sir, Mr. President.
I will play golf. I will go on vacation, and I will drink... beer.
Yes. Will you drink mine, please? It's called Baroctic Porter. I don't know if I said that.
Only if you reelect me. Give me a second chance. Let me keep going. I don't know.
Okay.
Thank you.
What is he brewing on? Do we know what his system's like?
I'm sure
it shows a kettle. They 5-gallon carboys. He's using a secondary.
Jippy,
if you listen to our show,
he'll tell us everything during the interview.
Send him an IPA kit.
Okay.
Aha.
This is how we get in. We send it addressed
to
the
idea.
Chef.
Yeah.
With an invitation to come on the Brewing Network.
Oh.
We made this for you. We just made it for you.
I did send a shirt or through my connection at the White House. I do have an interior connection at the White House.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You sent a shirt?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're never going to get a photo with that. But send the kit. We might get an interview.
I will. That's a good idea. I'll do that.
I'll
do that next week.
All right, what else is in the news?
The BA has announced the introduction of a new draft beer quality website called draftquality.org. Draft Quality Beer Manual is available for free download. The second edition is available in printed form through the BA's online store. The website will be updated on a regular basis with news, upcoming events, and other resources to support the industry and further the mission of improving the quality of draft beer for all beer lovers. Visit draftquality.org to learn more. I guess it's Drauch Quality. Draughght.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Tell me how you pronounce that, because I never know. I always say draft.
I think we've been told that
be draft.
It's both. It actually,
oh, really?
That there isn't a rule for it. It could why not drought just, is not wrong.
Then why not just say draft and spell it like draft?
Because we're stupid. I don't know. What do you want from me?
I don't know.
So what does this quality site do? I don't understand.
It just teaches you how to take care of your lines and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Great free info. It's awesome.
I mean, we as homebrewers, you know, we put so much quality, so much time and quality, I'll underline that again, into our beers.
I do,
supposedly.
You're right.
Why not put that kind of same love and care into your draft line? So
I love it. Yeah. Because it's kind of been a scattered resource, and I think that's indicated even in our interviews. As soon as it comes up, someone's always like, well, how often am I supposed to do it, and how what's the right way? And
yeah.
People are always like, well, it just depends on the beer. You got to look into this. So, yeah. I like a main resource.
Yeah, it's one that the industry's needed for a long time. I mean, there's a lot of scattered information. You're absolutely right.
I hope that there's a place on it that we can report pubs that have not.
Wouldn't that be lying?
No, but isn't that a good deterrent? It's like Yelp for brewers.
It's like Megan's Law.
Yeah. You got to post that. I think it's important information, and you could avoid it. By doing it right.
You need a TV show where we go and bust these people, like Kitchen Nightmares or something, where we go and...
No, like To Catch a Predator. Right. Oh, hello, Pub. Why don't you have a seat here?
Yeah, come on in here.
Can you tell me what's going on with your beer? I don't know what you mean, Chris. Well...
What did you have on tap before this Pilsner?
Yeah.
Rodenbach? I thought so.
Yeah. A tangerine wheat?
Yeah.
Don't you think you should have checked the lines? Oh, I was going to. You were, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This one's from Prague. The Czechoslovakian hop harvest is expected to plummet by around a quarter this year due to bad weather.
Yikes.
The Czech Republic is one of the world's top producers of hops. They ship to 80 countries, including Japan, China, Germany, and Russia. Which would be kind of odd if they didn't ship to Germany, I guess. But the Hop Growers Union there said that they show a much lower yield than normal. They cited freezing temperatures in February and a draft in spring, maybe. But they also say there's a ton of supply from the exceptionally high harvest of the previous 2 years, and that prices are unlikely to rise.
Oh.
Here's a fun fact. Czechs are by far the biggest beer drinkers in the world per capita.
Apparently. Excluding the people in this room.
Well, yeah.
25% drop? Is that what you said in the beginning?
29%.
Ooh.
Well, he says around a quarter. The reports I've read are 29%.
Really?
Or maybe there's 24. Let's say around a quarter.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine. That's a lot. But I guess surplus is good in the previous 2 years. I didn't know there was a surplus in the previous 2 years. I thought it's been bad there for a couple, but...
I think that was like 3 or 4 years ago, and things kind of rebounded.
Okay.
Rebounded.
Well, it's a good thing I'm done brewing my Czech style pills for the year.
It's just perfect timing.
Yeah. It's all about me.
Speaking of you, Hard Cider is having itself a renaissance.
I love that guy.
Heineken has announced that it's taking over the U.S. distribution of Strongbow, the number 2 alcoholic cider in the country by sales.
Aren't you a fan of Strongbow, JP?
I do love Strongbow, but I'm much more of a fan of Blackthorn dry cider, Justin.
Okay. Carry on.
MillerCoors acquired Minneapolis-based Crispin Cider Company earlier this year, paying about $40 million for a company that produced its first cider in 2008. AB InBev launched a low-calorie cider under its Michelob beer brand in May.
Yeah.
A month before that, Boston Beer rolled out Angry Orchard Cider. Actually, I did not know that was Boston Beer.
See, they should advertise with us, and then everyone would know
about
it.
People would know.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, especially a big cider fan like myself.
Yeah, I would try it.
Yeah, for sure.
A Sam Adams cider? That's a great idea.
I hear it's actually pretty good. I don't know. It's too high. It's high in alcohol. It's like 7%, isn't it?
Or I like that.
I don't know. I haven't tried
it. Pretty typical.
So I like my cider.
Oh, man. I love cider sales volumes at U.S. stores have surged 56% this year.
Is it just the popular thing now, or is it the gluten intolerance thing?
It's probably a little bit of both, but I wonder if it's a shift in just kind of something new. People are tired of big beers, I think.
Right, right.
I think the gluten intolerance is a conspiracy.
It's a myth.
It's a conspiracy.
It's on your head.
It's by the gluten-free association. Someone's making money on it.
I wish I was. Angry Orchard, Michelob Ultra Light Cider, and Woodchuck Cider have accounted for about 85% of cider's U.S. growth this year. Mm. MillerCoors says the sales of its Crispin Cider are growing at 150% clip this year and thinks U.S. cider sales industry-wide could grow fourfold over the next 5 years. Wow. And I've read that on some blogs and on Twitter and all that kind of stuff, that cider's slow or actually quickly becoming the next big thing.
Wow.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Tasty, you should open up, you should open up a cidery, Tasty.
Aren't you looking? I like cider. What would I do?
You would make money.
I would a beery. What?
You would make money.
Make money.
You know who makes fantastic cider is Beardy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
he's my cool. God, dude. He had this wild fermented cider. He just pressed apples and let it sit outside overnight, and it was phenomenal.
Did you do that at your house?
No, at his house.
Oh. Yeah. I want to try it.
It's gone.
I like a good cider. I didn't used to. It used to be, well, they were always so sweet, but once I found dry cider, I'm a fan.
It's got to be dry. I was never a fan of Ace or Widers, you know, the pear nonsense or whatever.
No.
It has to be a dry cider, like a Blackthorn or a Strongbow.
Yeah, or Two Rivers if you're in the
Two Rivers
the Bay
is good,
area.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
That's it. Beer News brought to you by craftbeer.com. Go check them out. All right. So I went down to a hippie show in Berkeley on Friday.
Oh, no.
They do those in Berkeley?
It wasn't very good.
Was it Ashkenaz?
It was okay. It was at the Greek, which I like. It's a good venue.
Yeah.
It was beautiful Edward venue. Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros, who I like, but I don't know. It was a little pretentious, you know. Anyhow, the highlight of the night was that I stopped by at Triple Rock beforehand.
Good old Triple Rock.
They had a whole bunch of beers on tap that they're sending to the GABF. And after sampling a few of them, I'm going to admit that I have high hopes for Triple Rock this year.
Oh, yeah.
I think
750 is right on point right now.
750,
wow.
I had two pints of that.
What is that?
The name is a piss take on 1500. Roger Davis introduced it when he was a brewer there. It's a really hoppy, dry hop pale ale.
Got it.
Real nice beer.
Hmm. Because it's half of 1500?
Yeah. Hmm. The mind of Roger.
I get
imagine
it.
That. Yeah.
Right. It was a great beer. The other one, although I'm not sure they're going to do too well in the category because it's such a broad category, but their rye beer.
Yeah, Rye Smiley.
Holy cow, that was a very nice beer. And you've heard me bitch about rye beers in here before when people just use too much of it. I think they did a wonderful job on that beer. I think the reason it's not going to do that well is that the judges will comment about the lack of rye.
Mm.
Whereas I think it's the perfect balance of rye. That's how they should be rewarded for that.
Yeah.
So, rewarded.
I'm speculating anyway.
Again, great hop character, nice dry beer, really let all that wonderful stuff come through. I mean, a little bit more ethanol, of course, than something like 750, but
right.
I think it had enough rye that hopefully if there's good judges that happen to stumble upon that one, they'll catch it, you know? They have a strong lineup for GABF, I agree, though.
Really good stuff. Now, the other beer that I had there, of course, was Nathan Smith's beer called Loose Change. And right when I walked in, Jesse, the manager there, said, you know, this is the beer you got to try. And Nate, he was right, man.
Good old Jesse, I pay him off for that kind of stuff, you know?
Well, you've outdone yourself again.
Thank you.
Now, this is a Pro-Am entry.
Yes.
For the GABF.
Yeah, the fifth year in a row I've done Pro-Am stuff with Triple Rock, and I keep losing. They keep inviting me back. They're crazy, I think.
I think they're committed to you.
They are, which is nice of them.
They better start paying the judges or something. Oh, the people are the judges, aren't they?
Yeah.
No, it's actually judged by...
it's judged by...
Pro-Am's judged by judges, but I bet they're homebrew by judges. So.
Now...
Not the pros.
I have high hopes for this beer because of the quality of it and also because of the uniqueness of it. So it's a 2.5% ultra session beer.
2.5%.
I think you've invented a new style.
Ultra session. Yeah. Super session. Ultra is probably the best one. Yeah, it's a 2.5%.
It'll sell better. 2.5%, yeah.
2.5%, my take on a traditional Scottish 60 shilling, which is known to be a very low alcohol, traditionally served on cask type of beer in
But
in
how
Scotland.
Low is it traditionally?
Traditionally, it can go up to that low.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it can be that low in alcohol. So this was a nod to that tradition. I've never actually been to Scotland, but Jamil talked about the style years ago on Brewery Network, and that reinterested me in trying this. I originally started brewing them so I could grow up yeast in a very low alcohol beer for other higher alcohol homebrews later.
I see.
Then after iterations and iterations of this beer, really fell in love with it as a nice... Sessional, yeah. So, counterpoint to IPA, we were talking about earlier, this is everything that IPA is not. It's malt forward, very low in alcohol, session beer with very little hops.
Good.
This particular beer had one hop addition, East Kent Goldings, 15 IBU, that's it.
When was that added?
60 minutes.
Okay. And you didn't hop it again?
Didn't hop it again.
Can we try it while we're talking about
absolutely.
It here?
Yeah, absolutely. Brought a growler of it from from Triple Rock. Got that yesterday.
So this is the Triple Rock version you have right here. Now, the you know, what I really liked about it was the body of the beer, as well as the SRM of the beer, and being a really low alcohol beer like that.
The SRM.
I felt like the flavor was unexpected.
How so?
Like, I don't know. I just felt like I was sitting in a marketing room and someone was like, unexpected.
Thank you.
Nate's Loose Change. The new fragrance by Nate Smith.
Loose Change.
Unexpected. It's unexpected in the sense that I expected it to be thinner and lighter, right, and not have the mouthfeel that this beer has, and definitely not have what I would consider a pretty bold flavor at 2.5%. Whenever I've raved about low alcohol beers, they've come out of Squatters.
Right.
Almost exclusively. I have not really raved about another low alcohol beer that hasn't come out of Squatters. And this is a beer that I would not only put in line with those beers, but say you've gone even farther because you went all the way down to 2.5% alcohol.
Thank you. Yeah, this could pass a Mormon test for a beer, I think. We could sell this beer in Utah and maybe people would like it. But no, I mean, I like you're saying about the mouthfeel and the malt complexity is driven by a moderately high mash temp, 154.
Okay.
And a slightly complex malt bill, but not overly complex. It's mostly crisp Maris Otter, about 88%. And then about 5% C120. And about 5% C55. All the crystal malts are English crystal. And then about 2-3% pale chocolate is what you want to shoot for in a beer like this.
You do taste that C120 in the mid, in
definitely,
the mid palate, that kind of toasty, raisiny kind of thing.
Slight raisin, yeah. I didn't want that to be too dominant. It can be kind of nasty when there's too much of it in the beer. But I think mashing a little bit higher, and I know Tasty knows what this is all about. You get a little bit more mouthfeel retained in the beer. I mean, this beer started at 10.34 and finished at 10.15, a fairly high finishing gravity considering it started so low. But that's
where you get in the body. Yeah.
Exactly. It keeps some body in the beer and keeps it from being thin and boring. I mean, you have some mouthfeel there and it helps support that malt.
I see.
Complexity.
You know. Supports the 15 IBUs, too.
15?
Mm-hmm. 15, yep. East Camp
Which Golden. Is pretty high for a 2.5 beer.
I guess so. I guess that's a good point. Yeah, what would a Bud Light be? How many IBUs is a Bud Light?
Probably less than 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Eight,
maybe. Somewhere 10. In that range.
I don't know. I'll find out for you.
I mean, I only compare it in that sense because of the alcohol. And it's even less alcohol, you know, than a Bud Light. So exactly. I'm just trying to figure out the balance. Had you brewed this before?
Yeah, this was actually a beer that I thankfully and was really nice to do well with this in competition. In particular, the NHC second round, it was in Minneapolis, 2010. It took silver there.
Okay.
The same exact beer. And it's done really well in local competitions as well. It was a runner-up best of show in competitions like Alameda County Fair last year and stuff like that. So when Jeff and I were talking, Jeff is the new brewer at Triple Rock since Roger left to do Faction. And Jeff Kimpy and I were thinking about a recipe that we could do for the Pro-Am, and I said, well, what about this small little session beer? And he really likes the idea of traditional historic beers and beers that really fit into a style. So it was a perfect choice. I mean, the yeast that we use for this beer is their in-house yeast, White Labs 001.
Okay.
It's perfect for this type of beer. Scottish fermentations are known for being long, cool ferments with low esters, so that fit right in with their program. They had that yeast on hand, and I knew we could get a hold of the exact type of English malts that we wanted to use, so it was a really cool choice to be able to get the exact same ingredients that I would use on the homebrew level to do in the brewery. But really, I'm just lazy, you know? It's 2.5% beer, so that means grain out was like 2 scoops out of the mash tun, and I was,
cake,
and I was
right?
done, so yeah.
How many pounds
after brewing
of grain?
After brewing these big IPAs there, and I'm sitting there hauling all this grain out of there, I'm tired of it.
So right.
It's like now, it was, I think it was less than 300 pounds, that's for sure. Probably more like 280, I think, total.
As opposed to a normal, what, 600
pounds?
Yeah,
like 600 pounds, something like that for one of the big IPAs that we'd done in the past. So, no, I'm glad you got a chance to go over there and try it. I think it's a really unique beer. People that are interested in session beers with low alcohol but big malt flavor, if you're in the local in the Bay Area, go and check it out. This will also be at the GABF.
On the Pro-Am.
In the Pro-Am booth. Yeah, nice. I don't know what day yet, of course. They decide that later, but
how
you're
much
at GABF, go and check it out.
I would say that if this style of beer, and it would have to be this well done.
Yeah.
We're in more craft breweries and pubs. We would convert more craft beer drinkers.
Yeah,
all the way.
Do you know? Because I hate that mistake of offering a non-craft beer drinker the first IPA on the menu, or even another type of beer that kind of just reinforces the fact that they don't like these beers because they're not very drinkable.
Yep.
or they have too much of this or that. This would be, the color of it is perfect because they go, mm-hmm. I don't like dark beer. Just try this, okay? Try it, because it's right, not going to taste like a dark beer to you. And then the whole experience, the mouthfeel, the flavor, the low alcohol, this would convert people. They would go, oh, well, if more craft beer tasted like this, I would be a craft beer drinker.
Yeah, it's non-offensive to a non-craft beer, because it's not dark. I mean, it's maybe a light brown.
It's Newcastle colorish.
I was just going to say, and then you can integrate other better beers that are similar, but maybe a little more alcohol-y. Newcastle. Not better.
She just called Newcastle better than beer.
I'm saying better than Bud Light.
Right.
Dickhead.
Wow. Bud Light dickhead.
No, you're absolutely right, though. I was hanging out at Triple Rock yesterday, and they had a Cal game on the TVs, and there was a guy who, I think he just wanted to come in and watch the game, and he was asking the bar. He'd never been there before, obviously. And he was asking the bartender for, I just want a beer without too much hops. And she was looking at the taps going, most of our beers are pretty hoppy. And he eventually wound up with a pint of this, you know, based on the recommendation of the bartender. And then I helped kind of back it up. So, like you're saying, people are interested in an approachable beer.
Yeah.
When they maybe walk into a brew pub and everything is 7% and 80 IBUs, they don't really know where to begin, you know?
But at the same time, a whole group of beer geeks could sit around and talk about this beer for an hour.
Exactly.
If they tried it at the bar. Yeah, it really fits both extremes.
Yeah, it has enough depth to carry a conversation about it. And it's, you know.
And there's a new brewery in Minneapolis. Actually, Mitch Steele had mentioned Kristen England earlier. Kristen England, I think they got their license about a month ago. Poor Decisions is the name of the brewery. And they've beer that's on their roster. I think one of their main flagships, called Pubstitute, which is his take on a 60-shilling, sort of to fill this niche in the market. So it'd be exciting to see how they do, and I think they'll do well in the Minneapolis area to begin with. So fitting that niche, you know, there's a gap there, like you're saying, approachable for new folks, and beer geeks can sit around and say, oh, this is really interesting, low alcohol, it's got this, it's got that, you know.
No. Right. Well, if I were a local craft brewery, Drake's or Heretic, I would be calling Nathan and asking him to put this in a bottle.
Yeah,
because
it'd be a lot of fun.
I think there'd be a market for it. I think that sitting around at a barbecue for 6 hours drinking this beer would be a really nice way to spend a day.
Yeah,
and then I probably wouldn't start making mom jokes about my neighbor, you know, or whatever.
Well, I know that Jesse Serignana at Triple Rock, the manager there, you mentioned, he was really excited to see us do this experiment because he wanted to see how it would go.
And right,
he's pretty happy so far that they're selling a bunch of it and that people are liking that. It's very different than the rest of their lineup.
Right.
You know?
Well, Nate, after a few years of being shut out from the National Homebrewers Conference, you finally won that this year. I wonder if this is your year.
It'd be a really cool one to do that with. I mean, because there's a lot of great beers you get at the Pro-Am booth at the GABF. You know, lots of big alcohol beers, really assertive beers. So this is the other end of that spectrum. You know?
It would be, you're right, it would be kind
It'll
of
be a
the
tough
one
sell,
to win with, but, though.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Of them, you
It'll stand
go.
Out.
Yeah.
Hey, Nate, are you willing to share the recipe for
no,
this beer?
Don't do it.
Again?
It's a trap.
Yeah, absolutely. It's...
Again?
Again, yes. I'll share it really quickly.
I mean, it's not Janet's Brown or anything.
No, you already gave it a minute ago. Oh. 85.
Yeah, the recipe is 88% Maris Otter. Yeah. 55% C55, or 5% C55, sorry, 5% C120, 2% pale chocolate, and the original gravity is 1034, finishing is 1015. It's 59 IBUs of East Kent Goldings, 60-minute edition, and the yeast is White Labs WLP01. The mash temp on the beer is 154, and you'll ferment it for about 2 weeks. No dry hopping, nothing fancy in the ferment. Just keep it cool and,
2 weeks.
And ester-free.
What temperature? 65?
65 degrees, yeah.
Wouldn't it be done in like 4 days?
Yeah, it would probably be done in 4 days, but yeah, just let it hang for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Would it be easy to overpitch a beer like this?
I think it would be easy to overpitch a beer like
this.
That's
and a
that
good
was
point.
Something that, yeah, it's something that, you know, Jeff doesn't normally make beers that are that low in his brew house, so something we're watching for, and, you know, I think he compensated for that a little bit. I don't know the exact details on what he did, but yeah, I think it'd be easy to overpitch a beer like this. And Kristen and I, when we've talked about brewing a beer like this, he thinks that that's a typical mistake that homebrewers could make in making a beer like this, is that easy to overpitch.
mess up the flavor. I mean, what do you think for a session beer tasty in pitching rates? Would you do something lower on like a hoppy session beer?
Yeah, I'd go just by the gravity, hoppy or not. I put a 1040 beer into ferment today. I haven't pitched yet because I'm going to ferment at 56. I'm going to pitch there. But I'm because I'm lagering basically with California 01. I do want to put a good pitch in because I'm going to be fermenting at a cold temperature. But and I have a big harvested batch of yeast. I could pitch a crazy amount of.
You could way over pitch if you wanted.
Yeah, so I'm kind of like I think I'm going to under pitch it almost intentionally.
Right. I think in some ways really giant beers that require special pitching really. Small beers also require special pitching in the opposite direction.
The other way,
too. Yeah.
Exactly. Because, a beer that's only, say, 2.5% or 3%, 3.5%, whatever, it's going to show everything. I can taste the water in this beer
exactly.
For sure. Nothing major wrong, but I could see maybe something more in the chloride issue would make, towards that direction, would make it taste a little bit
and
more.
Actually,
beer.
I did adjust a little bit with chloride on this, and probably go even stronger.
I think you could, based on what appears to be the water.
Because you want to accentuate the maltiness with a beer like this. Yeah.
But, I don't want to have a big yeast flavor showing up in the beer because I overpitched. Because there's no place for that to hide that flavor.
Yeah, and it may be tougher to get it out. I mean, to get the yeast out, I'm saying, if there's too much in the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Nate, would you be willing to give the recipe for this beer? Oh, we're good on that, right?
There's a book called Brewing Classic Styles, and there's a 60-shilling recipe in there, too.
I like this beer so much. What I think we should do is after the show, we should make this show available for download later.
That's a good idea.
I think it's great, right?
Certainly be fun.
What are you examining over there?
I'm looking at Evil Twin.
Similar SRM?
Next to your beer, and it has a similar SRM, a completely different beer and malt profile. But your SRM is very... Yours is a little lighter, of course. Certainly a little less red. But it's a similar SRM.
SRM.
Which is interesting.
Semi-SRM.
I think it's pale malt, pale chocolate in the Evil Twin.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
Well, it's a great beer. And do you have your homebrew version of it here, too?
I don't. No, I haven't brewed in the last month or two. I need to rebrew for fun, but that hasn't happened recently. Yeah.
Well, it's a great beer. If you're looking for ways to plug in recipes to your system and figure out great beers like this, go to beersmith.com. You get a free 21-day trial of the Beersmith brewing software. It's fabulous software. It's the only brewing software on the market right now that's completely up to date for homebrewers and professional brewers to use also, but available to homebrewers. It's really just an amazing piece of software, and Brad over there at Beersmith does a great job keeping it up to date. It's a pretty new version that's out right now, and it's, like I said, a free 21-day trial version, so you don't have to take our word for it, but I think you'll find that all the different features are pretty amazing. You can easily design world-class beers at home. Make your brew day easier, design a recipe in just a few minutes, and then generate step-by-step brewing instructions that tell you how to brew your beer, which is one of my favorite parts about the software, because when you don't brew very often, getting step-by-step instructions, it's really awesome to be able to just print that out and go, all right, this is the next. Yep. You just forget stuff, So it's pretty cool. Build recipes quickly. Also, you can go to the blog.beersmith.com, and Brad does a blog, plus a video blog where he's interviewing a lot of people on there. And there's now a recipe trading website, too, all through beersmith.com, and there's literally thousands of recipes that you can go get there. So doing really cool things over there. Just go check it out. Get your free trial now, beersmith.com. Check that out. Hey, Beaver, somebody sent in a song for you.
Awesome.
Hey, Beaver, you just turned 29 and you got called Beaver.
He's called me Beaver since I was 21.
I know.
Yeah, I did.
But now you're old.
Now I'm an old Beaver.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that thing's seen some use.
Oh, my God.
Only now that it's had a baby.
What are we talking about right now?
Beaver, are you guys going to pop out another baby soon or what?
No.
No, huh?
Mm-mm.
What are you waiting for?
Money.
Uh-oh.
Logical.
You're not counting on the BN for that, I hope.
Hell no.
Hell no. I am.
You keep holding your breath for that, JP.
Yeah.
So Sugar Valley Brewer, I think his name is, he sent in the last Bevo song.
I wonder if he lives near
Sugar
Valley.
What was the last Bevo song?
Rack City Bitch, Rack City Bitch.
Oh, no, it wasn't a Bebo.
Oh, that's
so, no, he wrote JP's an Asshole.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what it was. And I think he also, and he did a song for Susie.
Oh, okay. Oh.
So he's just making
Didn't
his way.
Did he sing a song about Susie's boobs?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, creepy.
And,
Beverly's vagina.
Seen better days. Yeah. It's done in the.
I'd like to see any one of you go through childbirth.
Vagina rejuvenation. Coupons will be on Living Social next week.
Sam's Isn't sending that, the link every day. Did you see this Groupon?
Is that the, where they like inject something? I have like no collagen idea. Or some crap into? I don't know either.
All right, you want to hear it, Beef?
Do I have a choice?
Nope.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Go ahead.
Let's try it.
Let's try it.
Oh, it's pretty.
It's in the same key as usual.
Yeah. Right.
Dear Bevo, let your hair hang low.
It's going to make me cry.
It might.
My Bevo, let your hair hang low. I'll bring you than those D-cups can hold. My Bevo,
nice.
Let your hair
beautiful.
Hang low.
Can't wait to see where it goes.
He has a great voice.
My Bevo,
he does?
Your big boobies. I long to see.
I want to see.
Dear Bevo, your big boobies. I long to see.
Longs to see them.
Don't we all?
Delicious and round.
Oh,
wow.
Hang on while I pound.
Oh my God.
Your big boobies, my mind, I see.
While I pound your big boobies?
No.
My Bebo, I dream of your hair. Down there.
Oh, man.
Lovely Bebo, do you have hair down there?
Got a few basic questions to ask.
Right.
When I'm whacking on my wang,
wow.
It won't do a thing till I'm dreaming of your hair down there.
In some Bebo. Sugar Valley does it again.
That's beautiful.
What a beautiful tribute, yeah. Bebo.
How red is my face? Right?
Not very, but I thought it was a beautiful
it's
tribute
so
to her Sugar
like
Valley.
Down there. That's what we wanted.
Good thing it's Sugar Valley.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good thing it wasn't
really
creepy
have
at all.
A great voice. But
yeah.
Well, he should be doing the Lord's work, I bet.
Wow.
Yeah. Didn't the voice didn't help out the content for you?
Oh, that was so wrong.
You want a towel?
No.
Listen, his thing won't do a thing unless he's thinking of her hair down there.
Yeah, so help a bra. What's it like?
Right. Is there hair down there? Did I turn your microphone off?
Are you waiting for an answer?
I wonder what's happening.
The button's broke.
It almost seems as if I've turned the microphone off.
Right. Depends upon the day of the week.
Oh,
I see. I see. So Monday, no. Tuesday, full bush. She's like a dude.
Yeah.
She gets five.
Aren't you Italian?
She's 5 o'clock shadow.
Okay, let's not talk about this. Please stop. I shouldn't even have gone.
Finally pushed her the breaking.
Well, I think there could be another song in this.
Oh my gosh, I'm so flustered.
Well, good job.
Thanks for letting me listen to that first, and giving me a heads up. Dick.
It would ruin it all.
I listened to it by myself, and I was like, I could play this for everybody beforehand, but I don't think there's any other way to do it than just to do it.
You got to go right into it.
You just got to put it on live.
Absolutely.
Well, I was surprised. Maybe a little shocked, yes.
At least now, JP, if you have more plugs to do at the end of a show, we've got another tune to play.
No,
that's
we don't.
But it's a bit longer.
That's true.
Did he get in trouble for his last song?
Yeah. I think the one about Susie, his wife, wasn't too happy. Actually, he told me for Bevo's song, he had to run home at his lunch break and record it really quick while his wife was away at work.
Oh, I don't. I could picture him being alone in solitude making that, because there's no way that. Yeah.
Like a creeper.
My Bevo. Fapping it out. Hair.
Little sugar.
Hang
man.
Low.
Sugar man.
Whatever your name is. Sugar dude?
Sugar daddy.
Sugar grandpa?
Yeah.
Fap daddy.
I appreciate the thought and effort. Please stop. Stop.
It's a nice thought.
But you appreciate the thought.
The thought and effort that went into this.
Yeah.
I never want to hear it again.
I wouldn't appreciate the thoughts if I were you.
Yeah, and that
just the effort.
Well, you don't have to see the thoughts.
I appreciate his talent.
The talent.
There you go.
The rock.
He has a very good voice.
Cups could ever hold.
Justin, stop it.
Whatever they mean.
My Bevo, let your hand.
You don't pay me enough to stay.
Hang low. It's just so nice, though. It's well done.
I kind of picture him singing in church, but thinking of these lyrics instead.
Right. Oh, dear. What other things do I have to do today?
I don't know.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I think I have that other song to play, too.
What other song?
It's not about Bevo, but the one that came in with the email about...
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought that was it for whatever reason.
No. All right, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll wrap things up. If you want to call in for Drunk of the Week, you can do that in the next segment, but do it quickly. I'm not going to wait around all night for you drunks. 888-401-BEER. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
All right, BN Army, it's trivia time. What's the only homebrew shop with over 1,000 recipe kits, $4.99 shipping on orders over $100, and is also home of the Wolf shirt? The one and only answer is Austin Homebrew Supply. For over 20 years, they've specialized in creating recipes such as the best-selling Texas Blonde Ale, Apocalypso, Hop Bomb 2.0, and Double Chocolate Stout. And they just recently unveiled their small grain kits that produce 1 gallon of beer. Visit Austin Homebrew.com to browse their extensive catalog of equipment and ingredients. They also have mini clone recipes of your favorite commercial beers. They're the exclusive retailer of BrewVent Yeast Fuel as well, Yeast Nutrient, and the all-new Bodybuilder. Follow Austin Homebrew Supply on Google Plus to participate in video hangouts on popular brewing topics. So visit AustinHomebrew.com today and make sure you sign up for their weekly email with news and specials. Austin Homebrew Supply, AustinHomebrew.com.
When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for any beer style. I want a Cicerone. The Cicerone certification program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are three levels in the Cicerone program: certified beer server, certified Cicerone, and master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerones are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
This summer, Reed Antis from New York won fully paid tuition to the 2012 World Brewing Academy Concise Course in Brewing Technology, thanks to Lalamon and Danstar and their 2012 Beer School Contest. It was so much fun, they're doing it again, announcing Danstar's Beer School 2013 Contest. From now until December 13th, 2012, every time you use Lalamon or Danstar Premium Brewing Yeast, your empty packet is your entry for a chance to win a professional brewing course. In the Beer School 2013 contest, Lalamon will sponsor two lucky winners.
listeners, one professional brewer, and one home brewer in a random drawing for fully paid tuition to the 2013 World Brewing Academy web-based concise course in brewing technology worth nearly $4,000. This course will change the way you think of beer and brewing. Get your official entry form and rules at danstaryeast.com. Get brewing with the Dry Yeast Advantage from Lallemand and Danstar. Visit danstaryeast.com.
When Michael Fairbrother started moonlighting, he had no idea how quickly his dream was going to grow. Having homebrewed for 15 years, Michael decided to go pro, but not with beer. While attending his homebrew club meetings, he saw ladies knocking their men out of the way to try his mead. Moonlight Meadery is now 2 years old and can produce 200,000 bottles a year. It's the first New Hampshire winery to ever distribute to California and Australia. In fact, you can now find Moonlight Meadery meads distributed nationwide. And they ship direct, too. They produce 56 different varieties of mead and are unlike anything you've ever seen on the market. Michael Fairbrother at Moonlight Meadery is a real success story that can make the BN Army proud. Visit Moonlight Meadery in Londonderry, New Hampshire, or online at moonlightmeadery.com. Moonlight Meadery. Romance in a glass. Did you know the Brewing Network's very own Code Writin' Fool's son, Ryan Wolf, has opened a beer mecca in Missouri? The Wolfbrow House of Beer has hundreds of beers from all over the world and is conveniently close to I-70 in St. Peter's. Free tastings Saturdays 4 to 6 p.m. featuring special guests from local breweries. The best build-your-own six-pack around with every style represented. And kegged craft beer available for your kegerator, too. There's always something new at the Wolfbrow House of Beer. New and hard to find beer every week. No two visits are the same. Just like passing out at the Rat Pad.
Hi, this is Ryan from Wolfbrow House of Beer. Mention the Brewing Network when you stop in for some cool free stuff. Mention JP for a swift kick in the ass.
The Wolfbrow House of Beer. Beer with personal service from a member of the BN Army.
This is Code. Visit my son's shop or I'll yank the f***ing BN website down.
www.wolfbrow.com.
Live Beer Radio, The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters are back.
888-401 beer.
Whatever.
All right, welcome back to the program, and thanks for staying with us. This portion of the show is brought to you by our friends Stu Stewart and Bamberg Beer Me. Beer tours of Bamberg, Germany, offering two tours each year to the largest concentration of breweries in the world. There's the Spring Beer Garden Tour of Bamberg, Rausch Beer and Beyond, and the Fall Bock Beer Tour of Bamberg. Bamberg, no place like it. Also, be sure to like Bamberg Beer Me on Facebook for the latest tour news and images. All right, well, I'm not sure our phone system is working properly this week, so we may not get drunk of the week calls.
Oh, the Verk. There is a song in your inbox. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, crap.
Someone had sent a song in.
Today?
One? Yeah, just right now.
Bebo's feet are the best.
A little hairy, but nothing a bick. Can't take
them.
Care of. Oh, God. You are a hobbit in
just my toes.
Waiting.
Oh. I do see it here. I will need to download it. Oh, that happened quickly. Okay. I don't know what it's called, but I will play it.
Her name is Eva, and I can say she don't know what's going on today. She's got a baby, and it's on the way. She's going to get butt baby on the way. Butt baby, baby, butt baby, baby, butt. What? Butt baby, baby, butt baby, baby, butt. What? Butt baby, baby, what? Baby, baby.
Wow.
That was horrible and not worth.
Can you see my, can the listeners hear my nostrils flaring?
Wow. Was that one better than the
no!
other?
No.
All right.
Didn't mention anybody. Well, to anybody.
WTF.
Some poor kids in Turkey got a hold of an iPhone and made a song.
I like how the beat was. Beep, 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 beep. Yeah. Terrible. Not to say that I don't appreciate your talent.
Where is it?
People love you, Bebo. I think you should be. You should feel thankful that that you inspire them to write songs. You know,
you should take your wand and cast spells on them. Cast multiple spells.
I could.
So I brought in Firestone Walker beer that's only available in their area code. It's called Firestone Walker 805.
Yeah, did we break a rule here?
Why, did you see it up here, JC?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yeah, just so we have it here. Yeah, I brought it up. I actually brought it up because I knew we were doing this...
little segment on session beers and stuff?
Yeah. So this is a blonde ale that's pretty sessionable from them. And I was pretty pleased with it. That's amazing. Said it's selling like crazy in the 805. I think partially because of the marketing. It's you know, named after their area code. So I think people like that. But it's also a great blonde ale. It's described just as like a sessionable blonde ale, basically. Is how they describe it.
Yeah, 4.7% alcohol, it looks like, on the label here.
Yeah.
It's pretty crystally finished.
Do you like it? Or is it, when you say that, you mean it's kind of sweet?
No, it's not sweet. No. I'm just seeing just what his take on it. I mean, that's just what he's done. I don't think it's well done.
Yeah.
Maybe a little slight Munich malt and some Saaz or Noble type hops in the finish. Tastes like a little bit.
Melanoidin?
Yeah, slight Melanoidin quality from the Munich type malt that might be in there. It's really good.
It's great beer.
And just pound these on a hot summer day easily.
Yeah. I could easily...
Like Bebo's boobs.
On a hot summer day.
Yeah.
They're all sweaty.
I just cut that one up right for you. Yeah.
Wow.
I could easily...
What was that?
Sound effect.
You step on a tube of toothpaste?
Yeah. Otherwise known as my wiener. I could swap out the 805 with my occasional... Mission Street Pale Ale purchase.
I won't swap
out my Pale 31, but usually I'll get the Mission Street and the Pale 31 because I'm a Pale Ale idiot. I could easily swap out the 805 with my Mission Street, though, every now and then.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Nice drinkable beer there. But we can't get it in our area code. You got to go down to the brewery or be in the 805 to bring it home. I brought home a case, but I had to share it with other people, too. So there you have it.
Represent, bro.
Central Coast.
All right, so this is a song that was sent in a while ago, I guess, but he resent it because we didn't play it. It's out of Canada.
Oh.
It's one of our Canadian artists, probably heavily influenced by Celine Dion.
Yes.
Or Bryan Adams.
Or a Newfie.
I don't see any problem with any of the artists you just listed.
Of course you don't.
Yeah.
Dear Bebo. Oh.
So far, awful and off-tempo.
Right. But somebody's shredding.
Are you playing four songs at the same time?
We're playing the bridge first.
No, it's one song. I just paused just to make sure I didn't have something else going on.
It's like overtracked this song here.
Now, I listened to this one a little bit beforehand, so you should know that it is... It's written for the BN about all of us.
Okay, great.
But you're going to have to... I have a very hard time understanding any of the words.
Okay, that's my specialty.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
chick backups in here. Teddy bear blood.
That should have been the song Bebo's over and over again.
Now we're getting to the Bebo's real song. Bebo's tits
rock. Bebo's the chorus.
Rock. Get the do now. Rock me down now, titties.
That's it.
This is the first time I've heard a harmony in this song with the two people singing.
This girl likes your tits too, I guess.
It's still not a good harmony.
Maybe she's singing Mixolydian scales.
Not to say that I don't appreciate their talents.
Does Canada have talent?
Well, they appreciate your talents.
Even if one's engorged. Yeah.
Yep, 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 yep. There's a little yep, yep, Janice Brown ending.
Yeah.
It's a pretty strong effort.
Wow.
It is a pretty strong
effort. Yeah, and they put in some time on that thing.
Bevo's tit rock.
Justin, you're holding it down.
That's the hook.
That's the hook right there.
That should have been the whole fucking song.
Shiznit.
It made the song.
Yeah. You're right. That's a ringtone if I ever heard one.
Bro, that's exactly
just
what
that
I was
part.
Thinking, dude.
Bevo's
tit rock.
Blobber Glop is ashamed to be Canadian.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, that was a good time.
Oh, balls, that was bad.
All right, if you're tired of just thinking about Bevo, go to adamandeve.com right now, and for a limited time, if you use coupon code BNARMY, they will give you free shipping and 50% off just about any item. And also, three free DVDs. You get to choose from categories such as anal, chunky, lesbian, MILF, point of view. I'm doing this off the top of my head. I'm doing pretty good, I think.
Bisexual,
chubby.
Co-eds.
Oh, I did chubby. I think I did chunky.
No, I think it is chunky. I think you're right.
It is chunky.
Yeah. Co-eds.
Hair down there.
Asian.
Hair down
there. Tits that rock.
Asian, yes, yeah. I think that's one. All sorts of great categories. All you gotta do is go to adamandeve.com right now.
Water
50%
sports.
Off one item.
I don't think
that's one. No, it's in there.
Gilf should be.
Gilf?
It's not in the list, but it's in there.
What about Great Gilf?
Great double G Gilf?
Yeah.
Great Gilf.
Mommy, what is double G ILF?
Well, where did you get that?
Daddy got new things in the mail.
Daddy's computer. Use coupon code BNARMY and do it now. You know, don't go shopping in that creepy store where people look at you like the creep that you are. You can do it all from the comfort of your home by going to adamandeve.com. Use coupon code BNARMY. You get a rad discount. So check it out. Do it.
Check it out.
Bevo's. Let me just try to skip to that part.
Bevo's
is wrong.
Congratulations.
It's like psychedelic stoner rock.
Yeah, exactly, like, yeah. It's like a knockoff old Caius or something.
Yeah.
Hey, hey, hey. It's a do now.
Yeah.
A rock with titties. Hey, rock me. Hey, rock me. Hey.
That should have been
who
music.
Is this from?
Devin.
Who is the Prime Minister of Canada. Which is weird, but... He's kind of a musician.
Does Sam get to play with those things yet, Beav? Or are they still off premise?
For production only.
They're still for production only.
Production only.
That sucks. How long before that kid gets to play with them?
Bat him around.
Whenever I decide to stop being a hippie and quit breastfeeding.
What is the normal age of that?
10?
About 6.
It depends upon how much of a hippie you are.
I told you I knew some creepy lady who she let her kid breastfeed till he was like 8.
Yeah, that's weird.
And the kid was all jacked up too. He was a nasty little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kaiser, her doctor said I should do it until she's at least a year, and then after that it's strictly up to me. So
when is she gonna be a year?
In a couple months.
Mm.
Are we having a big rager? You want me to make her a fountain?
We are.
She already has two.
We are
fountains.
Having a birthday party.
A left and the right one.
I'm not sure if you're invited or not.
I'm going to make her a titty fountain.
Oh my gosh, that'd be so great. Paper mache
two
boots.
Streams.
I can do it.
We can totally do it.
I'm kind of into fountain making right now.
Yeah.
You're good at it.
The ironic part is you have a giant one in your backyard that doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Yeah. That's part of what got me into the fountain
inspired
making.
Inspired him.
Because that one is really daunting, and I don't know that I can do it.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I really want a water feature of some kind.
Start small.
So I started looking online for like little indoor fountains. And for one, the selection kind of blows. And two, they're really expensive.
Yeah.
People are paying like $400 for these things. So I looked into it and I was like, I could build that.
Good.
So I went to build one. And then it just so happened to be Bevo's birthday at the same time. So I built her the pissing angel.
Here, I have video of it.
Yeah, can we post that somewhere? Can you send that to JP?
Facebook.
Okay, so if your friends would be, but can
I think I can download it? I can download it on from her Facebook, I think, and then post it as the BN.
Post it because it's kind of awesome. Schumann helped me, by the way. So now I could totally make you a booby fountain for baby Esther's birthday if you're into it.
Whatever.
Will it go on the front porch with the angel fountain?
Whatever.
We'll need you to model. We need some still photos.
I'm an artist, and I want it to be accurate.
Exactly.
So I'm going to need you to model.
It looks beautiful, by the way. I had not seen it yet. This is wonderful.
It's nice, right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Thank
Very
you.
Professional. You guys have a future in fountain making,
I
building,
so.
And promoting.
I also thought that myself. Yeah. I think I could make a lot of creepy fountains for people. I think it could be a little side business. You know,
I think so too. I think you could definitely do it.
I can't cue up your closing song, JP. So we might have to play the Bevo song for the end.
No.
Bevo's dance around.
Not Bevo.
No, the other one.
No, no, I found it.
Oh, here I can just share it on our Facebook.
Which
wall.
One's creepier, Bevo?
Yeah,
the first
Bevo.
One.
The first one.
You don't like the first one?
No.
It's just creepier. She didn't say
talks
she didn't
about
like
pounding
it.
And pubic hair. And
but he's only pounding himself. He doesn't talk about pounding you. If that helps.
No, I think he said like her boobs are to hold on to while he's
while
pounding
he's
away.
Pounding.
No. He said that he's thinking of them while he's pounding.
No. We need to find this point. In this
okay.
Now.
Well, we'll listen to the whole thing.
All right.
Oh, for the love of Jesus.
Trust me, I've listened to this song a few times. Listen, I've pounded it to Bevo's... Never mind.
Songs.
Songs a couple times myself.
Nathan, these are the moments in time when I wish there was more alcohol in this beer.
Right. It's
Which,
terrible...
by the way, is delicious.
I'll have to serve a shot of vodka with it for you. Thank you.
My Bevo.
It sounds so endearing, like the what? My Bevo, my dear.
Right.
Yeah. What a creeper.
Oh, he means it.
Not that I don't appreciate your talent.
Big boobies I long to see.
Bevo.
All right, here it comes, I think.
Yeah.
Delicious
and creepy.
Here it is.
Hang on while I pound your big boobies in my mind. I see.
See? He said, delicious and round. Hang on while I pound. Your big boobies in my mind, I see. So he's not talking about pounding you. He's just pounding himself, which I think is completely reasonable.
Bevo, you got to email me that stupid video. Yeah.
Can I just text it to you and then you upload it from your phone?
Just email it to me, please.
I don't know how to take it from my Facebook into my email.
Oh, God.
Isn't it on your phone?
Share it. Email's an option.
Oh, I can. Yeah. Never mind.
Jesus.
Shut up.
Okay.
My Bevo, I dream of your hair.
Down there.
In a plastic bag on my wall.
Yeah.
Lovely Bevo, do you have hair down there?
Sam, please send me a little Ziploc baggie full.
When I'm whacking my wang, it won't do.
I think we have to ride that one. Whacking.
Till I'm dreaming.
Now I know why he had to come home at lunch while his wife was gone to write this.
Down.
It's a nice ending.
Yeah, it's a little tender.
Beautiful.
It's very tender.
It's very tender.
It's like he's almost out of energy.
Yeah.
Cleaning up a little.
He does kind of climax.
It's as if the song isn't the only thing that just finished.
That's right.
He's spent himself.
Slowly and awkwardly.
Mm.
Okay, I found your shiznit, Jippy. So I think we're done here, right?
I think so.
No more reads? No, you're good there.
Let me look here.
No, no Twitter game?
No, we forgot the Twitter game today. Yeah. You do have another song.
You don't thank our sponsors?
You do have another song in your inbox if you want to try that mess.
Okay.
Why not? Why the hell not?
Could it be worse? Maybe.
I think we're going to have to write one some more just ourselves here.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think Sugar Valley should keep it up. He told me he's trying to write one about me, too. So
great.
If you think that was creepy. All right, let's see. New song coming through. Let's see what we have here.
Bebo, gonna have a baby. Bebo, gonna have a butt, baby. Baby butt, baby. Bebo's gonna have a butt, baby. She's planning on her big butt, baby. And a butt baby's gonna come out of that butt. What?
Is that about poop?
Wait a minute.
He's like super old.
Is that,
I think so.
I think it's a song about duty.
Is that a... What the hell is that? Thoughts.
It's called a song.
Private Information Band. Is that Andy Wood?
That's, well, it's Cry for Help. If that's,
I don't give
what
a shit what his crappy band name is. Is that Andy Wood?
Yes.
That is the artist.
Andy, you suck.
Are you, that was from the heart, too.
Are you going to have another baby?
No! I do need to poop, though. I drank a lot of beer yesterday.
But if it's, what is a butt baby? Is that a duty reference?
Butt baby, but,
is it a duty reference, or is it a butt sex?
No, it's just funny.
Gonna have a baby.
Butt baby is fun.
Have a butt baby.
It's what?
It's fun.
But we don't know what it is.
It's nothing.
She's planning butt on baby. Her big butt baby, and a butt baby's gonna come out of that butt. What? What? What?
He is in so much trouble.
You are gonna have a butt baby.
I gotta get you. What the hell happened to that booth? It really sounds like you're at the bottom of a well.
You can't get me down here.
Waka waka wit coming at you. Coconutty butter.
Bottom of the well brown.
All right. I don't have time for phone calls. Unless that's Andy Wood. We're out of here.
I got a...
Is it Andy Wood?
No.
What are we on, a CB? Hey, Breaker, Breaker, 19, Bebo, who's on the phone?
It's not Andy. That's a big negative five, Nancy.
I can tell you who it isn't.
Who's on two? Two's gone. Who's on three? Let's get out of here. You got plugs for us today, Jippy?
Yeah. I got a plug for you.
Jippy the Great.
I got a match.
Plug me, Porter.
No.
Are we taking Drunk of the Week calls?
Sure. No. No? You got two calls right there. Look,
it's
at you.
It's too late. What the hell happened? Why did it take an hour?
Put him on hold. It's some creeper. I don't know his
name. Know, we did used to go like 4 hours. Now, since we moved studios, we're done by 8:30.
Which is 3.5.
Yeah. Which is 3. Yeah. It's not as if we're skipping a lot of time.
Well,
here.
Taryn's theory.
I got some of my life back. Is that a big deal?
Taryn's theory is that you actually have to drive home now. You have to be like the rest of us.
No.
You just want to get out of here.
No, because actually, Kate will come pick me up.
All right. Creeper on line 3, Andy Wood on line 2.
But, babe, just go to line 3 and then hang up on everybody else.
All right, Creeper on line 3. What's happening, buddy? Did you get Creeper's name, Bevo?
Why would she do that?
Hey, what's happening?
Nothing. I was calling for DOTW because when you guys mentioned it a bit ago, and I figured I would fulfill your request.
Beautiful. Who are we talking to?
This is Tyler from North Dakota.
Why are you talking?
What's on the forum? It's the name that go under there, I guess.
No, I go there every day, dude. You don't see me logging in, posting out?
No, that man.
Shit.
What have you been drinking tonight, Tyler?
In honor of JP's vagina, I had a homebrewed bitter. And a few IPAs, because Mitch, Saison, it's pretty good. I had a number of things, some pale ales and stuff like that, so, but I'm unfortunately a lightweight, so. Ew.
Aren't you just
as manly as that was to just admit, I'm in a lightweight.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how drunk are you? 10 being the drunkest you've ever been.
W.
The drunkest I've ever been, 6, 7, somewhere in there.
Six.
Let's be honest. I've been stupidly drunk before. But I'm annoying tonight, as you guys can tell. So I'm probably pretty drunk then.
How old are you, Tyler?
28.
It's all coming together now.
That will be a small peak tenth of a point deduction.
I'm not 28, I'm 18 with a beer belly.
Something. How do your friends know when you've been drinking, Tyler? What behavior starts coming out of you?
Grab their wieners.
Well, one of two things. I either get described as, Beavo accurately did, creepy, or just really insulting. And, yeah, I don't know.
Creepy also, how, apparently, like, creepy how, like, you start looking at people all creepy, like you're going to eat them?
Well, I try to not make a scene, so I talk quiet, and which means people, like, lean into me, and I lean again.
And then I...
It's just kind of, like, really creepy. It's
stab weird. Them in the throat.
It's weird because
and
most...
And then I eat their face.
And then I take a chunk out of their ear.
Yeah.
It's weird because most people, when they drink, get loud. I don't think I've ever met anybody who begins whispering after they're drinking. So, that's interesting.
I'm kind of loud in the first place. I have a lot of the jokes when I'm not drunk, so then I kind of go the other way when I'm drunk.
Do you turn into?
I was just calling because somebody mentioned DOTW earlier.
Do you turn into a racist when you're drinking, by chance?
I wouldn't say rapist, but I'm not going to lie to you. I was just looking at a picture of a girl. I mean, whatever.
Okay.
I wouldn't say rapist, but I'm pretty physical, yeah.
All right.
I'm a pervert.
By the way, I said racist, but that went in a much better direction. All right, Tyler, you are now in the running for Creep of the Week.
Megan's Law will be updated
Raper
shortly.
Raper 2012.
I wouldn't say rapist.
Somebody will be there to confiscate your hard drive very shortly.
But I've punched a bitch in the face, if that's what you mean.
I've been known to throw a bow or two.
But there's definitely a child locked in my basement.
Or there's room for one.
Right. Okay. Andy Wood, what's happening, man?
Hello, my friends. Love you all. How are you?
We're great. Thank you for the song stylings of Andy Wood of Cry for Help tonight.
You're welcome, and I'd like to do my impersonation of the last caller.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, you guys? I just want to let you know I'm calling for Drunk of the Week.
I thought we hung up on this guy.
I just want to let you know that I have a full raging boner, and I'm about to stick it in this dead corpse I have in my backyard.
Uh-huh. But are you a rapist?
Well, sure, I guess you could call me a rapist by trade.
Right.
But now, if I had my way, I'd be a ballerina.
You know, Andy Wood's 300 days are up. No longer having to take a pill every day. Does this mean that the Andy Wood blog, the 300 days, is now over?
Not at all. Oh. I will tell you, my friends, that I will continue blogging as long as my fan base of 10 or so people continue to comment.
Right.
I will continue to enter blog entries as long as it takes to get that number up to 10.
Perfect. Andy Wood gets his Google Analytics every month, and he's like, ooh, 11 this month.
Was he on birth control? Or?
He was
on birth control.
He was on a form of birth control. It was controlling a bacteria.
Yeah, right.
Or
not
a virus.
Drinking.
Yeah. Hey, did you run out and get hammered like the day you were off the pill or what?
Fuck yeah, man. You know me. I mean, I was like, let's get some 40s, you know, and like get totally wasted. And so I was like, there's a friend of mine named, his name begins with an M and ends with an S, and it's Mickey's, and let's get wasted. I totally got wasted,
got stung.
I'm like back to my normal self, and I just got to say, I feel like myself again. But I wanted to defend my last song.
Okay. What is a butt baby? Was that a song about duty?
Well, a butt baby is something that I think you will find on most Lifetime channels on a very serious documentary about women who don't realize they're pregnant and they have a baby in the toilet.
Oh, that's right.
Think about this. I mean, this is something that is very serious. And I'd like to just say, now that I have my voice on the airwaves, that toilet babies, or as I call them, butt babies, can be found in toilets across the nation. Mm-hmm. And I just want to raise awareness for that, you know, because it's awful. And I just wanted to make a song to emphasize my point. And I think I did a pretty good job. And I can't believe that I got negative feedback on that. And I just wanted to say, you guys, butt babies. Thank you.
Bebo's gonna have a butt baby. She's planning on her big butt baby, and a butt baby's gonna come out of that butt.
Well, now that I know what it means, it all makes sense.
Yeah, we didn't know what it was. Now that we do it.
Well, it doesn't make sense. We played that because now I feel like your listeners have context for that. And
right.
I know I use Bebo as an example, but Bebo had a baby recently, and it easily could have been a butt baby.
Yes, because there was no way that, I mean, I absolutely could have not known that I was pregnant. I could have just gotten real fat.
Right.
And yeah.
Could have.
Went to the bathroom.
Well, I could have.
I've seen you get pretty fat in the time that I've known you before right. You were pregnant.
Yeah.
Rude.
You always slimmed down again. That was the good part.
I will slim down. Well, basically, Andy just called you fat.
Because he thinks you're having a butt baby again.
Fat.
That may be the case, but I will say this. Like every other Cry for Help song, and of course, if your listeners don't know, cryforhelpfacebook.com.
Right.
Yeah. Butt babies are a national scourge, and I just would like to raise awareness. And Bevo, it could have been a butt baby. You never know.
Dude.
That cute little baby you have could easily have been a butt baby if you didn't right. have the awareness that you had
okay.
based on our conversation.
Let me break this down for you. These women
okay,
that
go.
Don't know that they're pregnant and then give birth into a toilet are retarded. There were times when I was laying down and my stomach would bulge out from the baby moving.
Well, not only are they retarded, but they're super giant
fatties.
But
they're also hella fat. Yeah,
so
like 400 pounders.
Called you fat when you were having a baby and calls you fat now.
JP, if you don't get
alluding to my fatness, I'm going to climb out of this booth, I'm going to break a bottle, and I'm going to shank you with it.
I'm saying Andy called you fat. I didn't say that I agree with him or disagree with anything.
No, let's be clear about that. I did call you fat.
See? I'm just telling you, in no uncertain terms, that this man called
you
fat.
I just want to be clear about that.
You have your choice of bottles here, Bebo. You have your choice of bottles that you can use.
You two assholes can suck it.
I didn't do anything. I'm just interpreting a song.
And I'm just trying to calm, I don't have a fountain here to soothe the environment, so I'm just going to play Bebo's song.
Tim, I know you have a shock collar. Can you put it on your husband?
Yeah, can we hang up on this atrocity?
My wife is telling me to get off the phone.
Andy,
I'm in trouble.
No.
God damn it. Ow. I gotta go.
Okay,
all
right.
I'm sorry, guys.
Serious.
Cry for help 300 days. I don't know. Bye.
Wow.
Is it over?
He took a beating.
As always, it's been real fun. Can I leave?
We're almost there.
I hate you.
The brakes are smoking on this train.
Delicious. And round.
Is that alluding to my lactating?
No.
The delicious part?
It could be, yeah. He's very deep, so that he really could be
also,
talking about...
it's not a metaphor.
Tits are real delicious.
This song might just be about the wonders of motherhood. We don't know.
I don't think it is.
To Gaia, the Earth Mother.
Down there.
Yeah, that's real...
philosophical.
Thank you.
All right, let's get out of here. Next week, we are on the air, and it's a Sunday show. How about that? We'll be back here next Sunday.
I'll be here.
Let me double check that. You are here, Beef?
If it's a Sunday show.
Yeah, it is. And we're talking beer cocktails next week, which, you know, they're going to have to do some convincing for me, because I'm not much of a cocktail drinker in general, so we'll see what they have to offer. And if they can sway this guy, then maybe there's something to this whole beer cocktail situation. We'll find out. In the meantime, JP, take us out of here.
Oh, shit.
How did you not know that was coming? Oh, I thought you were going searching for your shit right now.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Motherfucker. Thank you to our show sponsor, More Beer. You can get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home by going to morebeer.com. If you're on that old Twitter thing, check out Major Jip, which is me, for insight into an eroding psyche. Also, Scott the Jew has some art for sale. Follow him at Moscow Paints for slim to no info on the subject. For some good beer insight and homebrew info, follow Nate at Nathan Homebrew, and you can be hip and with it by getting all the latest information on his band called Brain Oil, by going to brainoil.com. The Trophy Fire are heading out on tour with our good buddy Adam Schumann. Find them on Facebook and see them in a town near you. Check out the Brewing Network store for all the latest BN merch, including a brand new IPA ingredient kit for sale. And be sure to find the Brewing Network on Facebook and Twitter.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his cherry.